unsurprisingly, I can't be bothered writing a big intro to the show this week, and that tells you everything that's happened this week, because in effect, nothing has happened on the field. St Helens are still top. They're going to win the League Leaders' Shield. Toronto are still top of the Championship because they won the League Leaders' Shield months ago. Featherstone and Lee will play off in 7 weeks' time to win the Championship Shield. Or as it's known, one of the old ashtrays from in a cupboard at Red Hall. Gary Schofield is off playing golf again. Mark Wilson has changed identity. He's part of the Witness Protection Programme, or as it's otherwise known, viewers of Free Sport. And he's called Mark Watson. Oh, dear. Gone in early now, and that's me in trouble. My name is Richard Shorewayne, currently the host of Proper Sport Rugby League, joined in the studio once again by Phil Kaplan. He's here.
I'm here.
How are you, Phil? Leeds in crisis.
Presence and very nearly crisis. Yeah. Leeds in latest crisis, yeah.
Well, Leeds have got a nice stand, though, which is more than, you know, say,
and,
Lee
and a women's team in a cup final.
And a women's
weekend.
Team in a cup final. Again, he's more than Lee, of course. Also here, second week in a row, token Australian. Some unkind people say fourth-rate Australian getting paid by English Rugby League here, but that's very unkind. It's John Davies.
Got to keep the quota up, Rich.
Got to keep the quota.
And I give credit to Phil for turning out while Scoey is obviously hiding from the London fans and the Leeds
Salford
haters
fans,
as well.
All the
yeah.
Salford fans.
Keith
yeah.
Lee in crisis.
Yeah.
Crisis.
So he's in crisis.
And also here, we're in crisis because we know nothing of what's going to happen in the next 2 hours. Because we've been joined by the man who's frequently told, stick to darts. It's, of course, Rod Studd. Rod,
hashtag
how are you?
Stick to darts. Hi there.
Could be a lively one tonight if he was awake.
It's been a long week in
yeah,
football.
I was sticking to darts.
You're listening to Rugby League.
Yeah. It's been a long week, obviously, in Blackpool. Of course, I asked a question last week on social media about... Lee, obviously, in financial crisis. Hashtag Lee in crisis. We haven't got that T-shirt sorted out yet, but we will do. They obviously had £500,000. People are scared that at the end of the season they'll disappear from the world of Rugby League. I checked on Wikipedia, which is a verifiable source. And the last long-term Rugby League club to disappear was Bramley. And before that, it was...
Scully played for them, just
go.
Before
That's
they
why.
Departed.
Before that... was Chorley, although they have a checkered history where it doesn't really count. And Carlisle, who were born in 1981, and apparently merged with Barrow. So apart from that, no great historic team has died since perhaps Hunslet. But then again, you can't have Hunslet reformed and everyone still thinks they're the same club.
Bradford disappeared, didn't they?
Who?
Bradford disappeared, didn't they?
Bradford Northern.
Yeah.
Can anybody explain to me Derek Beaumont's comment last week before the shedding of some of their top players where he said, we cannot make the playoffs when mathematically they still could? I know they didn't.
Should we have moved the transfer window
until after this weekend rather than before this weekend?
Well, any outcome is possible in any match.
I believe somebody may have said that.
once or twice.
But the reality was that it was... more than likely that Halifax were going to beat Rochdale and I'm going to come up with something controversial.
London and Barrow.
And there were those that thought it was extremely likely, despite the bookmakers making Toronto hot favourites to beat Featherstone, that Featherstone would beat Toronto, which they did.
With 16 men.
But anyway, as long as two of those three results happened, Lee couldn't qualify, could
it
they?
It was likely. But we can't say we are not going to make the playoff. I understand that he's actually probably done some of his top-earning players a favour by releasing them early, and he should be credited for that.
Yeah, the point is, though, if the only time he could sell at the current market value was before their final match against Sheffield. You've got to get out, you've got to sell. Yeah. You've got to sell, haven't you? If he doesn't sell then, whatever... And Lee then don't make the top four, which was the most likely thing, obviously. He cannot then sell... until the off-season, when the stock is valueless.
Well, unless
so he loses
unless,
the value of his
that's
stock.
That's my point, though. Unless you move the,
oh,
transfer
the
window.
Right, yeah. Okay,
have we again had the transfer window just too early, having it before the last round? We're into a semi-final week this week, so there's no eights being played. The fixtures aren't out until Wednesday.
Right.
Should we have said that the transfer deadline was midnight on Tuesday night, before the fixtures are announced? And if, by chance, Lee had got in, they would have... still been able to retain the players. They would have known their distribution for next season, which would have been significantly higher than it's now going to be, having finished in sixth.
Yeah.
Is this something else that we perhaps have been premature in putting in that transfer window?
When do you want it, sorry?
Well, Tuesday night at midnight.
Tuesday night at midnight?
This week.
This week?
Before the fixtures come
after
out.
After the final round of matches.
After when everybody knows where they're sitting.
Oh, I see. Okay, but all right, then, fair enough. But then you're just shunting down. You're shunting the circus down 72 hours or whatever it is, aren't you?
But also allowing for the fact that had Rochdale overturned Halifax...
Yeah, they'd have been in. Okay.
That Lee would have been in.
Yeah, fair enough. I just think that I just cannot comprehend why anybody wants to have a system where it allows... Well, let's just name them. Widnes.
It's never stopped you.
Let's name Widnes. Widnes have been... You've got a system here which fails to reward excellence, which is the whole idea of sport. It tolerates mediocrity and fails to punish rank ineptitude.
Come on, Rod. They've only lost 16 games in a row. Go easy.
I see 17 in the cup, is it, as well?
I was talking about Super League
opposition. Yeah. They did win a cup tie by some considerable margin against Coventry. But, right, they've been allowed... but basically, the system has allowed them, hasn't it, to sluice around at the bottom of the league, you know, losing match after match after match after match after match. And then it still gives them a chance then to ring up the cavalry and say, ride into Norton Park for this week, fellas, and then give us a chance of beating whoever it is they're playing in the qualifiers.
If you know you're unlikely to make the top eight, not going to make the top four, why spend a penny?
Well, you wouldn't do, would you?
I mean, £2 million.
I've been one open. They did that last year and they've done that this year.
Well, yeah.
They held money back and recruited just before it.
Doesn't that undermine the idea of having a salary cap?
Yeah, well, Mr. Hodge was quite right to do that. But, I mean, if you remember, what happened was the very first season of the eights, Mr. Carter at Wakefield, Get Carter, accidentally stumbled upon this idea, didn't he? When he sort of accidentally booted out a few players due to disciplinary misdemeanors.
His coach accidentally said the season isn't meaningful.
Yeah, but it was an accident. Well, it wasn't something that Mr. Carter set out to do at the start of the season, right? We'll do nothing for 23 games and then we'll try and get ourselves out of trouble. But it kind of like developed in that manner and they got out of trouble against Bradford and then other coaches or owners at the bottom of the league thought, aye, Michael Carter's stumbled upon something here. We'll do this. And that's, as you said, John, that's what Neil Hudgell, you know, he's a wise man. He thought, well, we'll do that. We won't spend the salary at the start. They did it last year, coming in the middle eights,
borrowing Mossy Massot and a couple others, and they've done it again this year. It's quite smart.
Yeah, it is.
And you look at who Salford and Widnes are signing at the moment, they will be different teams in the eights to the ones that they've been for the 23 rounds. When you bring Liam Finn in, it is going to aid Joe Mellor in the halfbacks. We saw briefly what Jackson Hastings could do in partnership with Rob Lewis for Salford. They're also going to have a hooker who knows how Hastings plays. But you know, are we not ourselves then undermining our own competition for what we call the regular season?
Yes, completely and utterly. There's two devaluings going on. One at the bottom end of Super League. So just to use the team as an example, let's just say Catalan Dragons, who spent a lot during the season and might have a lot of injuries, so on and so forth. And if they'd slipped into the bottom four, they'd have no leeway. They wouldn't have the same leeway, would they, as teams that haven't spent up to the cap?
I mean,
with this, if they had any money, could spend fortunes because they haven't been nowhere near the cap, could they? I mean, they could suddenly wheel in a couple of big namers to get them out of trouble.
And then at the top of the championship,
which you just mentioned, John, teams, if they can get anywhere into the top four on a limited budget, like Hulk AR did, and think, right, we're in the top four, marvellous, we've got the extra money, wheel in Masoi and the rest of the crew, and we'll get promoted. And it worked a treat for Hulk AR, didn't it? It worked absolutely perfectly for him.
I think we're all admirers of anybody who plays this great game, but are we not just creating wage inflation, which has been the issue in all the money that's been wasted since we got the golden handcuffs from Sky in 1996?
When this Wakefield thing happened by accident, I actually said, and I was, believe it or believe it not, I do say things a little tongue-in-cheek occasionally, a little bit flippantly.
No.
But really, if you're a player now who's if that sort of middle-range ability, sort of bottom of the Super League, top of the Championship, you really ought to be signing shortest-term contracts as you could wish to sign, and be this hired gun that in July goes, right, fellas, make me an offer. I'm a heart. Just pick out a name around. Josh Drinkwater. Right, I'm Josh Drinkwater. Have boots. We'll travel. I'll get anyone out of trouble. I want, you know, £2,000 a week. And if we stay up, I want a £50,000 bonus. Ring my agent. And why wouldn't you? That's better than signing up for a deal at the start of a season, isn't it? If you're that kind of player.
Absolutely.
Liam Finn. There's loads of players who would fit into that kind of like.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll get you out of trouble. The structure's just doing that, isn't it?
You've got a feel for the Halifaxes and the Toulouses and the Londons who don't really have at least London not anymore, don't have the funds to be able to recruit. So they're just basically, they would have been licking their lips playing Salford and Widnes a few weeks ago. Right. Now they're right. thinking this is going to be a hell of a lot tougher.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure why it just doesn't. That's just another reason why it doesn't work, isn't it? It's just another reason why that structure doesn't work. And I saw something this week saying that they should you know when people ask you when you're out and about and you follow rugby league and blah, and someone says, "Oh, I've seen this somewhere. How does it work?" And you think, "Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
Oh no,
just give me an hour."
Oh no, please.
Remember that thing that Scottish football wouldn't do?
Oh,
we
no,
did it.
Oh no, please don't ask me that. Please just ask me another question. Right, go and get another 4 pints and we'll have right, but. I saw someone else suggest this week that, you know, because the Super 8 is a write-off this year just simply because, you know, the top four have gone a mile clear. And it was suggested that they should only keep the points that they'd accrued against the other top eight teams. So St Helens wins over, you know, the whole KRs and Salford and Widnes would be expunged from the record. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine it's bad enough trying to explain it. Trying to explain that into the equation.
I might
try and work the table. RSW, I'll try and work the table. Come back to me in an hour.
I need to do some housekeeping.
My guess is it wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference.
Because obviously,
well, it'd constitute it a bit, wouldn't it? Sorry.
Obviously, as we know, we don't know what the fixtures are coming up. So
Wednesday at midday, for anybody who's asking.
Well, instead of doing that, go watch racing instead. Because I know when there's racing coming up, because today's show is brought to you by Pontefract Racers. In the Zone Family Day, experience the final brilliant family fun day of the season with tons of special events. On Sunday the 19th of August in the Zone. Fun days are the perfect way for all the family to learn more about the racing. You can walk the course, get a behind the scenes tour of the race course and meet famous horses from the past. I guess it'd be like dragging out Scoey, wouldn't it, at an event. There's also a fun fair face painting circus and a Hunt the Golden Horseshoe competition. Sounds like what the clubs are doing in the moment, the transfer market. And not forgetting about the racing, there's the £60,000 Highfield Farm Flying Fillies listed race with some very speedy equine ladies on display. To book your family package tickets for Sunday the 19th of August today, head to ponty-racers.co.uk. You can see that graphic on screen as well. Of course, the rugby league season is over. It finishes today. That's for viewers who are listening to Radio Leeds right now, whose rugby league programme ends. I guess there's no more rugby league. Leeds United are back. Have you ever heard of them? They're more interesting. It's all going on social media. Ian, the first person to say, Rod should stick to the darts.
Yes,
thanks, Ian.
Hashtag stick to darts.
Kev, though, says that Phil and Rod should run the game of rugby league over here forever. Have you cryogenically frozen?
Could be the new rumour.
The Walt Disney of rugby league.
The new rumour and Wood. That would be outstanding.
Which one's which?
Well, leave that to the imagination.
If Tom was here, we'd get him to Photoshop your heads onto, but he's not here, sadly, today. But there you go. Matthew Horton. Oh, I know him. I've seen him on Saturday at Warrington. Very interesting, Mr. Davidson's opinion on Lee. Are you unbanned? Are you waiting for their new owners to come in at the end of the season and let you back in?
Probably am still banned, yeah. It's up for, I mean, obviously if the owner, perhaps then the chairman as well. That's a curious one, considering they're not in Super League and won't be probably for, I don't know, a decade or so. I should be all right.
Why didn't you adopt some sort of Clouseau-style disguise?
Yeah.
try getting in with a can of
Fagnos and the beard and the Groucho Marx.
See what they say.
No, you won't go with can of drink. Actually, the Lee thing, correct me if I'm wrong here, so people keep talking about them going bust. All I saw it as was Derek Beaumont had assembled a squad that he could afford to pay on their income at that wage bill, and now he's got a lower income for 2019. He's cutting the wage bill and cutting the players. Well, he'll employ players he can afford to pay.
Well, he won't because he's leaving.
Yes, yeah, so, yeah. But the club. But this isn't the suggestion. They're not like, you know, they're not Bradford in debt, are they?
I suspect that if they don't find a replacement for Mr. Beaumont, they may not be able to survive at the level they're currently at. They may go into administration.
Well, couldn't they? I mean, there's plenty of clubs in that division that have got, you know, lower gates than Lee and lower income than Lee, who tootle along, obviously further down the table, but they tootle along quite nicely.
The seeds of this current issue there are sown at the end of last year. They kept a coach who got them relegated. They kept him on for, 5 or 6 weeks, and they eventually got rid of him. They lost 5 or 6 of their first 7, and that was it. And also, they decimated their whole squad, brought in a whole new squad, which hasn't worked.
There is another issue that says the £500,000 parachute payment that they were voted by their Super League colleagues when they were being relegated. It would appear there was an assumption what that money would be spent on, as opposed to terms and conditions that it needed to be spent on. And again, whoever...
What's that mean?
Well, they were given £500,000, yeah, pounds, and basically told you could do what you... Well, I think the Super League clubs that voted it assumed they would secure the futures of their existing players.
Right, OK.
That which isn't they, what which happened, they didn't. Because they didn't put, yeah, terms and conditions on saying, well, it needs to be spent on infrastructure, it,
right,
needs to be,
oh,
spent,
oh,
on...
Right, I see what you mean, right, right, yeah.
You know,
yeah, well,
you need to honour some existing contracts. Well, yeah, yeah. You know, and I think that is a sorry episode. For a sport that's £2 million in debt.
Well, a lot of NRL journeymen have just got another good payday, haven't they?
Well, that, yeah. But they there's a... It's a bit like Back to the Hired Guns, isn't it? They go round the same, yeah, teams, don't they?
You know? I mean, there's going to be a shortfall on... I think they had approximately £1 million to spend last year, which may or may not have included that £500,000. They're going to get from central funding about £250,000 next year. Now, I don't know whether £250,000 is enough for them to even... dispense with three quarters of the players they've currently got at the moment and recruit less cost players, or, yeah, whether they will just announce that they will go into administration and start again in League One.
Yeah, but I don't understand why they would do that. I mean, like, pick another team at random. Batley, you know, Batley haven't got vast resources, but they compete perfectly adequately in that division, and Lee would have to do the same if they didn't have the funding, wouldn't they?
The opposite with Batley is when they somehow made the top four under John Keir. They spent that money on a gym and a wrestle room, and they didn't go out and buy all these players. So they were smart, not stupid.
The other thing would be is if players had to be bought off the remainder of their contracts, that's a cost as well, isn't it?
A lot of their players would find another club at that level, wouldn't they? They'll find a club at a team at the top of the Championship or a team near the bottom of the Super League, won't they?
I don't know what they're being paid. I think that might be part
of
the issue.
Oh, right, I see. Right, OK.
Only if those players, I think, are prepared to take a drop in wages.
Right. Well,
they're currently being
here's
played
another interesting thing, because if Lee had been a Super League club in this plight and got relegated, all the contracts would have been cancelled. Mm-hmm. But they're effectively in the same plight by being unable to get promoted, and yet the contracts continue.
Mm.
How does that work? That doesn't make sense, does it?
It's another anomaly.
It's an anomaly, yeah.
And also, you look at what happened to Hull KR, losing the £1 million game, getting relegated, didn't get £500,000, managed to come straight back up.
I must agree, the kind of abstract awarding, ad hoc awarding of a parachute payment. I mean, if that was the rules...
Without conditions.
Yeah.
But
we don't know if it's going to happen this year, do we? We don't know if Widnes or Salford will go down.
Or Leeds.
We'll
get that in early.
Or Leeds.
Leeds in crisis.
Yeah. Well, you'd feel that if a Super League club, or more than one Super League club, were to be relegated, they'd have their hand out straight away, wouldn't they?
£250,000 each.
You'd have your hand out straight away, wouldn't you? Just say, well, hang on, mate, you did it last year for Lee. You can bung some our way, you know?
Ka-ching. On the topic of Lee, Kev, who, of course, is the man who one day, when the Kieran Cunningham statue is pulled down Saddam Hussein-like outside the Totally Wicked Stadium, he will be the prime suspect. He says one of the biggest mistakes Beaumont did was hiring that man, Cunningham. Chris Price, broadcaster, shouty man from St Helens, says, Beaumont, Kukash, et al., a list of owners who spent big bucks but left no legacy, i.e. stadium, training ground, infrastructure. It all went on players... They stuck it in their back pocket and ran, or didn't run in some cases. 500,000 would have brought Lee a decent training facility. Disgraceful. It's almost like at the start of Super League back in 1996, all these clubs were given lots of money, and some of their grounds are still exactly the same as they were back then, not saying Castleford, but Castleford.
I think it's safe to say, and it was reinforced with an interview with Maurice Lindsay last week, who... It was good to see him back. Very interesting, a lot of the things he had to say. Framing the Future, which is a document that was produced, I think, in 1994, which would have been 2 years before the advent of Super League. He was saying, and it is, if you get the chance to read it, the blueprint of what this sport should be. And whereas some clubs took on the idea that facilities were very important in the light of things like the Bradford fire, safety was paramount for spectators, modern viewing facilities absolutely imperative, some took that on and others didn't, and if Rob Elston has got 100 things to do at the moment, one of the things he should be doing is dusting off that document and saying, if you want to be a Super League club, you have to tick every single box on this particular document, because it is where the sport should be going.
But are the clubs going to vote in licensing when a lot of them wouldn't meet their requirements?
It's not just licensing. I think it's more than that. It is a vision of what the sport should be. And
No. Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying that they're not going to vote for their own... You know, they're not turkeys voting for their own dinner, are they?
Well, if you allow them to vote.
Well...
that's where benevolent dictatorship comes in.
It's a good point, because Maurice Lindsay, in that time, in the mid-1990s, did exactly what... any wise administrator would do, which was to think, what do we want rugby league, which became Super League, to look at? And Morris started with a blank sheet of paper and worked from scratch and put down all those pieces of legislation, or call it what you will, or ideas or guidelines or how you want to look, and worked from there. Now, that's exactly what Rob Elston... You've now reached another crisis point 20-something years later, and Rob Elston should be doing the same thing.
He's a protégé.
Yeah, yes, exactly. At the moment, he's trying to put out fires at the back door, the front door, in the roof, in the chimney, everywhere, instead of thinking, right, we need to just knock the old house down, and we'll start again with a blank piece of paper. What do we want rugby league in the UK to look like?
Absolutely.
On the field as the product for a kick-off, which is a mishmash.
Which he can't do if he's only the chief executive of Super League and which then, is one of the main issues.
And then all the structures that go with it. So how do you want the game to look at the way it's going to be played, you know, and that could contain all, like rugby union sevens is always an example I give, because they start with a blank sheet of paper. We want the game to look like this, so any head eye tackles you're going to get they want all those kind of things. Start with what the product on the field, how do you want it to look, and then what do you want to do with the structure, and start from blank, because if you do A and B, C, D and E are going to follow from A. Don't do A unless you actually prepare to accept B, C, D and E. And what we do in rugby league, A sounds great, do A. A, right, we've done it. Hang on a minute, what's this B, C, D and E that's come in? Oh, what are we going to do now? We don't want any of those. And that's how we do things on the hoof all the time, ad hoc, ad hoc, ad hoc, and then eventually it all blows up and we have to start from scratch. So that's what I do if I was Rob Elston, start from
scratch. But I think actually you talk about knocking down the house. The foundations are there, and that foundation is framing the future. And you build on the top of that. And that will give you a sport that I think is fit for purpose in a modern sporting environment. I think it's probably as good a time as any to mention one of the other issues that has come to light today, which I just think is a signpost of where the sport is, and that's that the Times are not going to take any coverage anymore apart from the Grand Final and the Challenge Cup Final. I think the issue about that is that tells you at the moment, when you add that to... obviously a £2 million deficit that in the short term it's not very easy to see how that's going to be paid off unless Oddsall is sold. You've got, as our good friend of the programme, Bilko, told us, Wigan's average crowd this year is its lowest for 15 years. And you've got now the Times, who are one of the major partners of Super League in its early days. It was part of the Murdoch empire. It was almost mandated to carry the sport, with a sports desk saying rugby league is not relevant to us at the moment.
Well, I wouldn't get too hung up about that. In all honesty, I mean, how much coverage does the darts get in the Times?
No,
darts isn't in crisis, is it? I mean, the world match play in Blackpool. You can't get in. You can't get a ticket. TV audiences are enormous, and the fact that the Times didn't print that Gary Anderson beat Mensah Zilovic last night, I'm not sure Barry Earn's too concerned about that. The World Championship still gets massive press coverage, so. You know, you talk about the Grand Final or the World Cup or the Challenge Cup Final.
It's indicative, I think, of where we stand. You know, they are covering three major sports, and they'll be the sports that their readers particularly want to...
Do you worry about that, John?
I think not the Times specifically, because I don't think, to be honest, that many rugby league fans would go to the Times for their rugby league coverage. But
there's quite
as part
of the tabloids, isn't there? You know,
The Mirror, the Star, the Sun. Yeah, they all do great coverage. But I think what Phil's saying, it is a part of a wider concentration in media. You know, you look at Sky, you know, the magazine programs that they used to do. There's been, you know, less and less across all media, across all mass media. There's been a lot more, obviously, in digital media, online, social. But yeah, we're not preaching out to the vast audiences that we're used to 20-23 years ago.
One of the reasons we're not is something as well that Maurice Lindsay was talking about, is that we haven't generated sufficient personalities to even be doing... We should be having magazine features in the Times about some of the interesting personalities that we've got, but our profile has dissipated to the point where we are becoming an irrelevance to the mainstream. And I think that it's not the only and significant and major worry that we've got. It's another indicator of the job that Rob Elston's got to do.
Yeah, I think rugby league has to decide whether it wants to be a proper sport which sells itself on the sport and its own outcome and people being interested. By that, I mean things like Premier League football, which sells itself. It's a sport. We're going to play a league. We play everyone once, home and away, and someone's going to win. And if you want to come and watch or televise it, that's great. But we're just carrying on doing it because we think it's Wimbledon tennis. We're going to play this tennis tournament. It's 128 and someone's going to win. If you want to watch it or televise it, that's great. Or does it want to be an event culture where we're going to stage events and it's going to be a sport which really nobody cares what the result is. Nobody cares who wins. No one remembers who wins. And by that, I mean things like 2020 cricket, Big Bash. Nobody cares.
Can there be a bit of both, though?
They're trying to be both of them.
Yeah.
Premier League darts is another example. Like the World Championships is the darts premier event. That is the key event, and that's a serious event. Premier League darts is 16 events on a Thursday night, and most of the people watching have gone for a night out, and they really don't care if Michael van Gerwen beats Gary Anderson, or Gary Anderson beats Michael Smith, or Michael Smith beats Simon Whitlock. They're just there for the night out and enjoy it. It's a brilliantly marketed and run event, so I'm not sure where rugby league wants to be in all that.
We use the example of cricket. I mean, 2020, Big Bash, whatever, it is hit and giggle. Yeah. I don't think I've ever watched a full game of 2020. But then you pair that with the Ashes, which is very tribal, which people, agonise over every over, every ball. Yeah. They really care about the results. So can't rugby league have, the events, the Magic Weekend, Nines, that sort of thing, where, Nines, the result isn't that.
But I think that the whole thing is we don't know what we want the sport to be at the moment. And that blank sheet of paper.
And that comes back to not having strong leadership and someone, and vision and planning, as we've just mentioned.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I was talking to a CEO of a Super League club a couple of weeks ago, and he said, can you name me some genuine stars in Super League that we can promote? And you start, Ben Barber.
Won't be here.
And then you go, have you got any other questions?
Let me just stop here one moment. Because isn't this the sport of rugby league which pays certain players extra money? I'm talking about the likes of, and I don't want to pick on Johnny Lomax again, but Johnny Lomax.
He's having a great season.
Yeah. Well, and some others who get this extra money from the Rugby Football League. Yeah.
But again,
and where are they?
Well, it's not where are they, it's what are we asking them to do for that money? If you're going to be an ambassador of a sport, what is it you're supposed to do other than turn up at champion schools and give out a medal?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and the other thing is, you're right, the clubs don't use their assets. I'm not going to name the club, but there was a winger a few seasons ago at a club who was scoring almost... invented the spectacular one-handed, try over the top of the thing. And... we asked him to. We want to do an interview with the player at Sky, and we were told that no, he's not doing it because he did an interview last week for somebody. Right, that's one of the leading clubs in Super League. But when you say to the players, "All right," he goes, "Yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to do that." This happens quite a lot in football, as John knows. But they don't need the publicity as much. But why leading clubs aren't marketing their own star assets or promoting the star assets and getting them out and about and doing stuff is completely beyond me, because they're going to be in for a rude awakening, because all they're going to do is just wait for with their hand out every year for broadcast cash, then they're going to be in for a rude awakening eventually, because you've got to do more than that to generate income than just go every year saying, can we have some more money? Please, sir, can I have some more?
We do on the back of Kevin Sinfield being runner-up in Sports Personality of the Year as a game? Well, nothing. What have we done on the back of getting to a World Cup final?
Happened. I was mocked for saying this will have no consequence.
No, but we were in a World Cup final less than a year ago.
Yes.
All of those players could perhaps should have been used as ambassadors for the sport, some of whom are being paid.
I'll give you an example about the World Cup, Phil, and I was out there covering England. After pretty much every England game, the journalists were almost cut off for doing extra interviews because the players had to go or they had to. Even against Papua New Guinea, after the quarterfinal, it was an earlier kickoff. They didn't need to rush off. We were getting ushered away. Now, surely there was only six, maybe seven English-based journalists who flew to Australia and covered England team. Yeah. Surely they should have been granted additional coverage, to push. Because the team did a fantastic job, They were an ankle tap away from, a potential win.
Hold on a minute. They were 6-0 down at the time when the ankle tap happened.
They still had
to score because there was someone coming across to cover. And even if they had scored, and even if they had converted, it still would have been level. Yeah, so let's not rewrite history.
It was England's best result in 22 years in a World Cup.
They would have had momentum, though, if they'd scored.
They would have had. They would have never met.
Oh, no, you put, you know, just couldn't, my, no, look, couldn't resist.
No, they've constantly lost to Australia by somewhere between 1 and 20 points. I mean, that's happened over... But you're right, they play well.
They got closer to Australia than they have.
And they got to a World Cup final for the first time.
They got to a World Cup final, and that should be celebrated. You're absolutely right. But you're John's point's a good one, because, you know... this idea that they want to avoid interviews. I mean, remember previously when they were over here, McNamara walked out when Pikey asked him a couple of pretty sort of, asked him some difficult questions, but questions that had to be asked about, you know, players being banned. And Pikey was quite right to ask them.
Yeah.
And he just walked out. But see the difference and notice the difference that, you know, Gareth Southgate's approach has made. You know, and you actually, footballers who've been regarded as, you know, aloof, sort of like arrogant young men driving 84 different cars.
Gun tattoos and everything.
And all that kind of thing. And then you actually meet via the media these players. You think, what a nice young man he is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Gareth Southgate, you think, what a great bloke. What a really nice fella as he's gone about his business. And the whole feel of the England team is, and obviously they got good results, but I suspect that even if they'd lost on penalties, that the reaction wouldn't have been what it was before, you know, they beat Colombia, because there's a feeling that, that's good.
And there was a connection with the team and the
player. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Brad Fittler did the same thing in State of Origin, New South Wales, apart from the yoga and all the other new things. Yeah. You got all the media in, and New South Wales won a series for the first time in ages.
But isn't one of the USPs accessibility? And one of the things we're not doing enough in Super League over here is making our assets accessible.
Well, make them out. John's right, you know, with England, I mean, Mr. Southgate made them all available, didn't he, before they flew out to play
speed
in Russia.
Dating.
Just everybody, just help yourselves. But so, more of that. I mean, I know Rugby League has done that in the past, but more of that has got to be good, hasn't it?
Well, I think part of the problem is a lot of Super League clubs just don't invest in their marketing and media operations.
Or don't have the resource to, because it all goes on the playing
side. Well, that's what I mean. You've got 50 grand there. Are you going to go and spend it on an additional halfback or whatever, or are you going to spend it on your marketing, your advertising budget, or how you engage? Oh, right. And the problem is, it's becomes...
Well,
you know,
think... Let me give you a specific and see what you think. Do you think Warrington would be worse off, the same, or better off if they'd paid Tyrone Roberts £50,000 per annum less and spent it on a marketing guru, or £100,000 a year less and spent it on marketing and media gurus? Do you think they'd be worse off or better off, or the same?
I would say Warrington are one of the best clubs in Super League for actually marketing. And you look at what they did with their Blake Austin signing on social media with the WhatsApp. I actually think they're a club that invests in marketing.
Right.
But, yeah, Tyrone Roberts is a different question.
But spending on player wages, it's been going on since the ball was first blown up, hasn't it? I mean, that's where the clubs always spend big on player wages, when they've got the money.
Mark.
Or sometimes when they haven't.
I'm going to take... Umbridge with David's comment here. He says, I'm making my money, more easy than Nigel Wood tonight. I'm going to moderate. I'm going to press the buttons, David. Mark, another Mark, says that it's almost as if clubs are allergic to getting coverage for their own brand. Well, they've got their own TV stations and podcasts and this and that and the other to fill these days. So they don't need the traditional media outlets that might attract other people outside of their own echo chamber, I believe is the phrase that people use on social media.
I think the other thing about the Times coverage that is important is that it does help you commercially. When you go to market and tout your product to potential sponsors and they say, what kind of coverage can we get for the money that we invest? It is important that you do have a mix of media, and the broadsheets are significant if you're going to get major investors in.
I'm not sure what the answer is. There just isn't enough superstars. You know, when old fools like us started watching the game, you know, there was more superstars, wasn't there? I started watching rugby league.
More superstars because rugby league itself had a greater relevance, prominence,
but there were
and awareness.
You wanted to go and watch. I started watching rugby league, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, because of Martin O'Fire. So a fire play on the telly, and family lived in Northwich, fairly, and I thought, I want to watch this bloke play. And you went to games, and they had all the glamour players like Jonathan Davis and Alan Tate playing at the time, and King Kurt Sorensen and all that kind of, and it was great. But when a fire got the ball, you thought, aye, something's going to happen here. You know, there was a genuine excitement of going to watch the game. But I mean, there have been modern day superstars. I mean, when Samkins first started playing, there was that was somebody who thought, you know, give it to Tompkins, see what he can do here. You know, and there was an excitement around that. But generally, there's... And that might not just be that the players, there isn't genuine superstars. It might well be that because the game has developed, because, you know, the athleticism and all the modern-day analysis of everything, that it's become harder and harder to score. You know, a fire used to just drift around everywhere. It's now so much.
Wingers
more
can't do what he did in this. Yeah,
the game's become more structured, and it might want to become more boring.
Tom Johnson could be the modern equivalent of Martin
Fyre.
If we take on board now that that's how we have to go down the road of promoting players. Jermaine McGilvery has got a fantastic backstory, which some have told to a certain degree. But again, he is
marketing more then.
Yes,
right. When Saints played at Knowsley Road, they marketed all these T-shirts. It was like Saint Wellens. I've still got one that says Sean Long, the Magnificent Seven. I don't even support Saints, but I like Long. I thought because he's my type of maverick player, and I like the T-shirt. I've still got it somewhere.
You like the dreadlocks,
didn't you? The dreadlocks. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, good old Longy. Love Longy. But no club does that now. So why can't I buy a Jermaine McGilvery T-shirt?
Absolutely.
Or a Tom Johnson sweatshirt.
But do we need the game itself to be spreading and expanding to hit new markets to sell them these kind of players? We're talking about we're going into the eights now. You look at the qualifiers coming up from the Championship.
Even those playing Wednesday. All right.
Three of the four teams at the top of the Championship are what we would call expansion teams.
Yeah.
Is that the road that the sport has to go down on the back of then promoting its superstars into new areas? Is that now essential rather than a choice?
Well, it might be, but I don't say this very often, but I have got absolutely no idea.
No, that's true. Yeah.
I have got absolutely no idea what's going to happen with Toronto.
No,
almost any outcome is possible.
Toronto.
What happens if let's say they don't get promoted, which is a fair possibility. Whatever means they don't get promoted, what happens now? I don't know what will Mr. Argyle do.
I'm sure they would have planned if don't.
For how long would he carry on?
Yeah, I think that's the million dollar question.
Under what circumstances would he be prepared to carry on? What guarantees would he want?
Yeah, but say they got in the £1 million game and they lost. Right, that's not inconceivable, is it?
Oh, no.
Johnson reloads the gun and they go again. And the same thing happens again. How long?
But what happens more perhaps pertinently is if they do win the £1 million game and he's denied that opportunity.
I can't see that happening. I mean, surely you'd have actually a case legally, wouldn't you?
Well, you say that.
Yeah, it depends what agreements.
We're back to Super League when Keith Lee Cougars won the league below to get into Super League, and were denied the place, and that ended up in court, and they got nowhere, did they? So
what due diligence has been done and what stipulation has been made about whether they're entitled to
But why wouldn't they be?
Exactly.
Well,
why would they have gone into League One?
Because some chairman of some of the other Super League clubs
who voted them into the competition in the first place
may not want them.
Well, so I'm with John. I just don't get that.
No,
look,
I don't.
If they win promotion by the on-field method that's been prescribed, then they have to be promoted. Otherwise, the competition has been degenerated in a complete farce. Because
if you listen to Rob Elston,
if you can stop them coming in, you can stop London or Toulouse or Halifax,
exactly,
couldn't you? I
mean, yeah.
But if you listen to what Rob Elston's saying at the moment, who is clearly under the jurisdiction of at least four Super League chairmen, it's not a given that they're coming in.
Well, listen, you cannot have a system whereby the promotion to the division is determined by Super League chairman voting whether they want to be in or what they want or not. If you want to go back to the chaos of licensing, go back to licensing. I mean, they keep going around in circles.
Absolutely.
Don't they? They go back to something that didn't work before. But if you want promotion and relegation, which
Let's
is what it should
Luke
be, fix- then if they get... Well, I don't agree with much that Andrew Chalmers said, but when he called them loopy fixtures, I was here hearing on my own in my lounge room reading it.
Want to bring in some social media,
don't
you?
Partly because Christoph's been on, pertinent to this point, Toronto apparently have a 5-year plan for Super League.
Have you noticed RSW that it's always any plan is of duration is always a 5-year plan. No one has a 1-year plan or a 10-year plan.
John had a 100-year plan. Yeah, I think they're about 20 years into that. Yeah,
and this government has no plan whatsoever. But there you go. We're talking about grounds earlier. I'll just have a quick aside on this because a couple of people pulled me up about saying Castwood's ground hasn't improved since 1996. Well, I don't think I'm necessarily incorrect on that point. Because it'd be like comparing Wembley to Wakey's ground, says Keith. Bellevue's a dump.
Is that the old Wembley or the new Wembley?
David says, Cass's new ground will be up and running in 2021. Wakefield don't even know where they'll be playing next year. Where's the site? Where's the work being done on Castleford Stadium? Because I can see York's. I've seen York's being built.
Again, we only get to hear snippets, but Castleford's ground is contingent upon some retail. And at the moment, the retail market is depressed to the point where there are not lead tenants
not
coming
forward.
Not as
depressed as I've become listening to you, Phil.
Brian's been...
No, I jest. It's a flippant comment.
He's Brian on...
just because I mentioned momentum.
Oh, no. We need to inject a few top rugby league players, says Brian, with Mick Morgan's genes to get some more interesting and entertaining comments in the after-game interviews. He said the same old. The problem is, every after-match interview in any sport, they're all the same. No one ever says anything interesting.
Sometimes you get, you know, boards falling on Brian McDermott.
That was a classic. Yeah, that was good. Yeah. When he cried
or
that time. Yeah,
Daryl Powell's 31 seconds.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, that was quite funny. Wasn't
and
it?
And
yeah.
To Maureen, you know, we all respect Mick Morgan and we like, you know, his product has a place. That place is not on mainstream television. I don't want to say these things. It sounds like I'm having a direct attack on someone. I'm not. There is a way you present sport, and that's not the way you present sport to a large audience.
I may be wrong in saying this,
but you can, you know, bottle us get and all that is fine on a club video. Why did that get dug up anyway is a question. But
Walking Campbell.
It's not fine.
Some of us can't understand it, Rich.
On television in 2018, won't work. Can you imagine how the perception of rugby league would be if they took off Eddie Hemmings and put someone on who said stuff like that?
Flat cap from Whippets, wouldn't it? That's what it would be. Yeah, that's no good. You can't.
The perception of our sport is bad enough as it is without us making it even worse ourselves.
I think it's safe to say we'd be playing at our stereotype.
Yes, I think.
And we're very good at that, aren't we?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the North. There's nothing wrong with our heritage. But we need to attract people outside of rugby league to watch rugby league.
For it to survive, we do.
Which is why we like commentary and stuff, because they're like new people.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Mark says there's loads of shots being signed up at Castle. Well, when it's built, but it's not built yet. Can't, you know, it's like wait till we've got another plan for another stadium. Until we're there, I can see them building at Leeds, I can see them building at York.
OKR have improved their ground, to be fair.
Yeah, they have, that's true. Widnes, years ago.
It was much better when it was just like a
Norton Park.
Snorting Park, you mark my word. Scratting shed, and yeah, it's marvellous.
Marco says, you have to realise where we are as a sport. We can't force clubs to meet criteria such as grounds, and we don't have money in the game. Do that, and you'll send clubs. Yeah, anyway, you can't use that phrase. Lots of people who think it's very easy, but it isn't. You need 12 million for a stadium. All of the clubs who've got one have had it bankrolled for them, or a councillor has paid for it. None own them. I tell you what, I'm a football club. Yeah, I've been annoyed in the past few weeks because everyone, you know, from Doncaster to Middlesbrough to Liverpool or whatever, they've had their councils on Twitter promoting the fact that they're bidding to host the Rugby League World Cup. Mine council is nowhere to be seen because we've got disgraceful sports facilities in the city of Wakefield and the Metropolitan District, and my MP, who is easily out there on Twitter saying, yes, we're going to get the, you know, I'm fully behind the Wakefield new stadium thing, yes, I'm behind it. And they asked the question last week a year on, any joy? It's on TV more than Ed Paul's used to be.
There is a knock-on effect, because until clubs like Castleford and Wakefield do have the ability to get in a separate income stream 365 days of the year, then that will impact on the football department. Michael Carter, who we've all lauded around this table for cutting his cloth according to his means, would love to spend a full salary cap. He's only going to be able to do that when he's got a facility that he can use in the community.
He's trying to buy Oddsall, isn't he, Mr Carter?
That's a strange one, isn't
We've
it?
Been asked
you're
about
move
this.
To, you're going to play at Oddsall, Rich? Well, is that what Mr Carter's thinking?
My theory...
Why would you buy another dilapidated stadium?
Well, isn't there a rule?
Well, especially when...
I know he doesn't own Bellevue,
what do you mean when it's dropped to third in value? Now would be a very good
time
to buy.
Well, there's a story that Bradford's trying to buy it back. Is that on the guards?
Who's Bradford?
I was being slightly obtuse on Twitter last night when I asked the question, what is the price of value of land outside Bradford? So what is the price of value outside of land outside Wakefield? Maybe you could buy one and then do a deal with the other. I don't know.
Build it there and then just lift it up and
yeah,
tow
yeah.
it.
Like they did with Featherstone, like taking that ground from Scarborough. Yeah, we'll just take those flats at the end of Bradford. Stick them at the other end, which have flats everywhere. Toby says, does anyone want to buy it? Seemingly so, because it's a prime location to be redeveloped into a speedway track or something. We don't know. It's like someone's asked us...
is odd about that whole thing is that Mr. Rimmer, who is now in charge of that part of the sport, was keen to say at the time of the purchase of Oddsall that it was vital for the game to retain one of its major assets. We're now trying to sell off that asset cheaply. How do you balance those two statements?
The same Mr. Rimmer, who was involved from the RFL point of view with several of those administrations or in helping the Bradford situation.
Possibly even the £2 million that the game is in debt, maybe even some of that is a court case around that Bradford imbroglio that has cost the sport a lot of money.
And I guess the depreciation of Odsell would. John has asked it a few times. He says, give Salford credit. We do.
They were superb on Friday.
What for?
Also, new owners will be taking
what are we giving credit for?
For winning.
They played very well on Friday.
They were really good on Friday.
So what?
Do we have any news on their new owners?
The Chinese consortium.
Well,
Chinese consortium.
They will not get new owners unless they remain in Super League. I suspect that the man who has divested himself of their ownership in the recent past is trying to bring some new people in so that his lineage is given credence, and that's the reason why he personally has paid for two players who both play for Manly, one of whom made a very impressive 20-minute debut last Friday night, but again is only here, we think, for the short term. And that's the issue. Until they know where they're playing next year, new investors are...
Why has Mr. Kukoc paid for Jackson Hastings?
Dr. Kukoc, are you,
Come on. I apologise.
because I think when he relinquished ownership of the Red Devils, he felt that the year after he went, he had to be seen to be leaving them in a position where...
Why didn't he pay off the debt? Surely that would have put them in a good position.
Or perhaps not by some of the players he did when he was in charge.
Paul set up an academy and a reserves team before he...
I think unless they get somebody in with some cash, they're going to be in a situation where this is just annual Russian roulette.
But how does cash
You're just going to keep spinning the barrel, and sooner or later there's going to be a live bullet and they get relegated.
How does cash buy you 3,000 more fans, which is what they need?
Well, in a sense, it doesn't matter. If you've got... an owner with enough money. If Sheikh Mansour bought Salford, it wouldn't matter if they had three fans, never mind 3,000, because he just fund the operation, you know, till the cows come home. It doesn't matter. So if you've got an owner with enough money, and it doesn't matter to him or her how much they're spending, then you can do what you like. If you're trying to run a commercial business without the benefactor model, then you're in a completely different ballpark, which is what actually they're trying to do at the moment, and they haven't got enough supporters. And in the end, there is an inevitability that Salford... This will please people. That Salford and the current model of any structure with relegation and promotion in the current model, unless Salford get more money from a benefactor, they are going to get relegated at some point, because sooner or later they just won't on their wage bill. They won't be able to get
it's
good
money
results.
In the right areas, because they've had money in the last few years that have just gone on players that haven't suited or sacking coaches and
but
losses.
In saying that, they got better results, didn't they? They were in the top eight.
One season,
but they've got a squad of about 28 players, and you can't survive.
But when
that.
They had a bit higher wage bill, they got better results. QED, they got better results. So you can say that
they actually got the best results last year, which was I imagine a smaller wage bill than 2015, 14 when they had Tim Smith and Rangi Chase.
They kept bringing players in and losing them straight away, didn't they?
But they had to pay them out. They had to pay them out.
Mansour would not invest in a sport with a salary cap.
No, of course he wouldn't. But you've got to do two things. One, you've got to spend with a higher wage bill. But B, you've got to actually recruit properly with that wage bill. And you know, Man City is a good example. Man City,
and you have to build a structure.
Don't spend. Man City's transfer spend is a lot less than people think, but they're a lot shrewder on who they buy, and they're a lot shrewder
with
their wage structure.
Look at what they've done with their academy and the kids they bring through. Listen, I mean, Aaron Moy's a great example.
Yeah, of course.
Spent half a million on him, sold him for 10 million.
And they've spent money on the training facility and the stadium that's adjacent to the Etihad as well. You know, which, you know. I mean, that's the kind of place Salford should be playing.
It's a good stadium.
It's more than adequate for a rugby league team.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see Salford, you know, become Manchester City Rugby League. I think that would be fantastic, not only for Salford as a club with Sheikh Mansour bankrolling it, but for the game as well to be associated with a major sporting brand like Man City.
You're not going to attract him with a salary cap.
No, I could. Well,
to the fact that what do we want?
Do you
the
want me to say
to
scrap
be?
The salary cap again? I've been saying.
No,
for
no,
about
but
10
I'm just
years,
saying what when we're talking about what we want the sport to be, can it be what we need it to be with a salary cap?
No, because you're not going to trap. I mean, it'd be interesting actually to see which would be worse if Sheikh Mansour bought Salford and started to just poured money into it, and Salford started winning everything. That would probably be better for rugby league than what you've got now, which is a mishmash of mediocrity sluicing around in the middle of the table, which is attracting nobody, is it? Nobody,
absolutely.
Nobody's attracted with that. And the standards going down.
Having a salary cap, we've only had four winners in 23 years.
Correct.
And when Super League came in, the idea was, a little like it is in the NRL, and we're not comparing standard, we're comparing the fact that when you've got a salary cap, you get a different winner virtually every year, and everybody's fans invest in supporting their team because there's no sense of inevitability about what.
Salary caps can work, as they do in the NRL, as they do in the NFL, but the NFL obviously has a draft.
They have to be huge,
yeah,
and everybody has to spend the
salary cap. The fact
and you have to have enough players in the system.
Yeah. Well, that's
the other issue.
The difference with the NRL is those clubs have junior systems. They all feed their, more or less, some have got a lot more money than others, but they're much more equal as compared to, say, Leeds and Salford, who are vastly unequal.
So one of the other major issues at the moment is participation, which is falling, which has meant that central distributions have been lowered. How does Rob Elston increase participation when he isn't involved in the RFL?
I think that's tied into the profile of stars or lack of stars and the marketing of the game. If you've got athletes like an Anthony Joshua or whoever who kids are idolising, who want to see, that's how you get kids to play in the game.
Right. That's why, as I said, I went to watch rugby league because I saw a fire scoring charge. I thought this played fantastic.
But in this modern day and age, do we need to take a fire equivalent to see you rather than
going to see
a fire?
But Rob Elston's actually right. One of the things he said was that, and this is the same with the Premier League, that the top division, the elite division, is what drives interest in a sport. Mm. People want to watch football to see Pogba playing and Aguero and these kind of players, and it filters down. Having a structure which makes, in the first phase of the competition, 8th versus 9th the big game, and in the second phase of the competition, 4th versus 5th, is a complete absurdity. It's utter nonsense. The biggest game in the Super League competition should be St Helens v Wigan, who are 1st and 2nd at the moment. St Helens played Warrington the other night. Well, in fact, the week before they played at Wigan, when it was 2nd v 1st, and they played Warrington this week when it was 1st v, was it 3rd at the time? Mm-hmm. I think it was 1st or 4th, whatever it was. And nobody cared. Nobody was interested, remotely interested. They were busy, looking at some nonsense involving 8th and 9th, where Leeds were scratting around against Wakefield. Who cares about that? The top, the elite teams, are the big game should be 1st v 2nd, and this structure has got to go. Because that is being destroyed. The elite competition should drive everything. Rob Elston is absolutely right. And then it filters down from the top. Make the big names in the big games be important and attractive to everybody. Make people want to be Johnny Lomax and Danny Richardson and these players. Richardson's fantastic, isn't he?
Yes.
I mean,
he's someone you can make into a star.
Right. But can anybody tell me when they've seen Richardson doing features in the newspaper, magazines, or on television?
I don't even know what Danny Richardson sounds like, hardly.
Mm. I've seen him a couple of times, obviously, with the match.
Going back to the £500,000 that was given to Lee, what if that £500,000 had been spent on development officers?
Well, they spent a lot on development officers before, Phil, didn't
they? The game didn't. Sport England did. And Sport England withdrew their funding, we as a sport went, if that money's gone, everything that came with it goes as well. Surely we need to be looking at somebody like, and I'll use him as an example because I know his backstory. Louis McCarthy Scarsbrook, for example, who at the moment is arguably playing as good a rugby as he's ever played in his life, age 32, could win a treble this year. Obviously had a great World Cup with Ireland. He's a cheeky chap, he's a character, he's the bloke that every time you turn on the telly when Richardson's kicking the goal, he's behaving like the slightly deranged person behind him. He is marketable. But at the age of 16, he had never heard of rugby league. He wanted to be a goalkeeper at Millwall.
You're right.
You take the £500,000, you retain your development officers, you take a game that involves Danny Richardson down into the south of England. Is that not what we should be doing?
Here's a radical proposal. You look at what basketball does in England, and obviously the NBA is massive. Basketball has got great participation. It's growing, and they all want to be NBA stars. Do you get Sam Burgess, James Graham, the other Burgesses and promote them. Sure, they may be playing the NRL, they're not playing in England in Super League, but they came from Super League. They made their names in Super League first. Do you get them and try and sell them as names?
You do if you've got the international competition as the peak of your sport.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. And
I know we have got a, we've
been
got a GB.
Tiny bit of traction.
We've got a GB tour next year back on, Phil.
But surely we have got, this is the other issue, we talk about it all the time on this programme, too many games.
Far too many games.
And what we should be substituting some of those games with is the national team with the Sam Burgesses in it that we can promote.
What you've got now, you're about to get, 2 months of meaningless matches of players playing each other for the third, fourth, fifth, and even sixth case, possibly, Warrington versus Wigan. Fatigue players, injured players, absent players in meaningless matches for the sixth time is not a business model, right? It doesn't work. Get rid of it. Get something in which is shorter. Play everybody home and away once. That's 22 games. Then play the... If you want playoffs, which everyone knows I don't like playoffs, it should be the first team wins. If you want playoff system, play that top five playoff system and finish. Stop. And if you need another competition, put another cup competition in because people love to see a cup lifted. Don't play 30 league games. Stop now before it gets even worse. And that's what Elston and Lenigan and people are saying. Right? And they ought to be listened to. The rest of these bottom leagues have got to listen. That is not a business model for an elite competition in rugby league. And if you haven't got an elite competition that anybody wants to watch, you're in trouble. Capiche?
Phil, you need to apologise, apparently, for saying, who's Bradford? People got very upset about you saying that. Ian,
say that.
Ian,
did he?
Says,
when did I say that?
He didn't. My client denies that allegation.
Ian says we should get rid of Catalans and Toronto and concentrate on that, like proper rugby league teams like Keithley and Batley and Dewsby and
Keithley in crisis.
Yeah.
Brexit rugby.
Because of course Catalans are not from the rugby league heartland of the south of France.
Foreigners are bad, Rich. We know that.
The south of France. The French. Why do we not make more of the fact that the French government collaborated with the Nazis to ban rugby league?
Would that be the same Catalan that are in the semi-final of the Challenge Cup this weekend?
Yeah. People have said we haven't spoken too much about the rugby this week. Probably because there's not much to talk about.
We haven't mentioned Bradford, have we?
We were talking about Oddsall and if they would go to buy the club or not. The ground.
I'm happy to apologise. I just don't.
Didn't say it.
Dawn says having Saints versus Wigan on a Thursday was ridiculous. I disagree.
That's their
on that,
biggest
Dawn.
Gate of the season. That was their biggest gate of the season.
The only reason I disagree is because the worst thing that you can do is have people from one side travelling to the other side on a Thursday rather than a Friday when it's a weekend.
This is a smoke screen.
And it was a Thursday after the schools had broken up.
I think the problem with that game was that there was more marketing around Bradford v York on the Sunday than there was around Saints Wigan, and that's the elite game.
And the problem is, you know, you're going to see Saints Wigan again in a couple. It's like Warrington and Saints was a really good game on Thursday night, and as it finished, you thought these teams could play each other again three times in the next 9 weeks.
Well, last year it was Leeds and Cass, wasn't it?
Mm.
And then they
and
played
that's
again.
Not good.
And they played again in pre-season.
Well, Warrington have already played Wigan four times, have they not? They've played two league games, a Magic game and a Challenge Cup game. They're going to play at least once more, obviously, by definition, and a pretty reasonable chance of playing again in a playoff match.
Mm-hmm.
That's six times. So a team in a season, they're going to play, let's call it 30, what would it be?
30, playing for the Josh Charnley Cup.
Yeah. I like it. They're going to play 30 odd in the low 30s, of which six will be against each other. So it's about a fifth of Wigan's matches are going to be against Warrington. Right, so if Manchester United play 50 games in a season, that's the equivalent of them playing Liverpool 10 times. Mm. Just let that sink in. Manchester United versus Liverpool 10 times.
And you've forgotten the pre-season friendly that they're playing as well.
Yeah.
Hull versus OKR. They play a million times.
They've got to play the pre-season Hull derby for the Clive Sullivan Trophy because they can't give that away during
the
season itself.
Why do they keep playing it? Why do they keep playing these games over and over again and expect people to be interested?
Like Dewsby and Batley, there was that.
They just played another game now, holding Hull and nobody cared.
There was a great article in The Guardian last week about
who won, by the way. What was the result of that?
It was Rovers. Rovers won. There was a great article in The Guardian last week about Dewsby and Batley. About Dewsbury and Batley. You're watching the dance. It was exciting. Dewsbury and Batley. And people saying, yeah, they got 3,000 people for the Boxing Day friendly. Well, why don't they go when it actually means something? I don't know. Anyway, who was it who said...
It's hardly the games do mean something anymore. This is the problem.
We had a comment. I'm just trying to find it now. From, I think it was Peter or someone who said that... Here it is, yeah, Peter. As we know, expansion comes before the Heartlands. Here's the thing. If I gave £500,000 to Coventry, London Scholars, I'll put York in there as well, even though they've been, you know, reformed or whatever. Do you think I get more value for money from York spending £500,000 on, because we can trust them for what they've done so far this year, actually improving their link to the community, the same for Coventry, than we can with clubs in the Heartlands? And let's face it, when was the last time, I don't want to sound harsh here, I support a team who's won nothing for, you know, 50 years. When was the last time Lee were massively relevant in the world of rugby?
Well, they won the league in the 80s, didn't they?
They won the league in the 80s. So that's 30, 40
years. I was talking
ago.
To a Lee supporter about the other day, so it was the greatest night of his life.
But since then, yeah, they were crap in the early 90s. I remember that. We used to love playing Wakefield, playing leagues, you're guaranteed to win. But they haven't done anything for years, and we're propping them up.
I think
their owners spent all the money on rubbish.
I don't see why people see it as an either or.
Because it is, Phil. Because if we give money to Coventry, we're not giving it to Keighley.
On the one hand, Toronto so far has been completely self-funded. And if they have done nothing else, they've brought, on average, 7,000 new fans to a sport that had never heard of rugby league 2 years ago.
But, Phil, the conspiracy among a lot of fans is still there that the RFL is giving Toronto money.
They're not giving
and
money.
What do they bring to the sport? I get asked this on social media regularly.
Catalan Dragons is the most successful club commercially in Super League. Their average crowd is somewhere
between... But they don't bring away fans. Because what professional sport runs or business runs itself on away fans?
I love that. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
But all of these traditional clubs who are in financial strife, through no fault of their own, are in an area of industrial degeneration. And all of the routes that have supported them, through no fault of their own, are no longer there. You know, Barrow were the shipbuilders. There is no shipbuilding in Barrow, you know. Castle of Glassblowers. The problem is that the roots that this sport is founded on, some are withering through no fault of the sport.
Yeah, that's true. But you have to
plant others to replace them.
I used to follow them a lot closer than more closely than I do now. But I follow Barnsley Football Club, and they've got exactly the self same problem. When the mining industry collapsed,
they got Billy Bean.
Yeah. Don't get me started. When the mining industry obviously collapsed, but they've had to reinvent. You know, they've had to sustain themselves in a different manner.
But what we're saying is the Champions League,
and they got in the Premier League,
is not structured around Barnsley, is it?
No, of course it's not. But I would be the first to admit Barnsley are just part of the cannon fodder at the bottom of the Premier League. That could be almost any sort of 10 teams that are at the bottom.
And if you were the owner of Barnsley, you would be hoping that you have a credible season, that you keep as many of your fans happy as you can, and you find one young kid that you can sell on for a lot of money.
John Stones.
They've had that
for
model.
For example.
They've had that model for the past few years, haven't they? They pick up players from League One and Conference and...
Yeah.
That we live in is a different world to when Swinton last won the championship in 1963.
But that,
I should hope so.
Yeah, but you've got to move on, haven't you? I mean, the things have to change. You can't constantly try. You know, we all do it. To, I mean, I do it a lot. You look back at things when you were younger with nostalgia and think it was all better, and it's a way of trying to make yourself feel a bit younger and, you know, feel a bit more youthful. But the fact is that you can't keep going back to sort of when Cumbrian Rugby League was the greatest thing. We must reinvigorate. It doesn't work.
But that's the other argument that we're having the other week, that Keighley and Barrow and Whitehaven have put out appeals at the moment because they're financially strapped. Keighley were in a really important game against Tunslet on Sunday that materially affects whether or not they're likely to be in a playoff picture. Less than 800 people went.
793 in point.
That's slightly less than 800.
It is indeed.
So is, in fact, the traditional audience still there?
No, not in the same sense.
So if you put money in, it's like we were saying about, you know, you put money into Salford, what it won't buy you are fans. If the fans in these places aren't there anymore, or their habits have been broken to the extent that, what are you propping up?
Well, it's an interesting one, because what happens on the field does dictate. Let's take Castleford, for example. Castleford's gates now are enormous, relatively, aren't they? You know, to say they were when they were struggling on the field.
As a percentage of the town,
yeah, but
it's fantastic.
If they're getting 8,000 now, they were getting 5,000, say, six or seven years ago. But that's predominantly because, well, A, what they're doing on the field, and there's a real feel for factor. But when you go down to the hose, you think, oh, it's great on a Friday night, you know, and it's they're playing well. Particularly last season, it was really nice to go down there.
It's not great when there's no Wi-Fi and you can't get in the press box because your knees and you can't see the screen because it's
dirty
too
glass.
Dirty. And you're trying to write a report. It's not so great, Rod. It's great when you're a punter and they're having a few pints, but
it's brilliant. I love it. You know, I don't even support Castleford. I used to go and watch them play. You know, lump on -20 against Huddersfield or something. And, you know, start seeing Sweet Caroline and go, oh, lovely. But, I mean, so what they do on the field does... It has some... It's not the be-all and end-all, but it's got some impact. And if John can't file a report on his Wi-Fi, then that really...
That's exactly... Well, yeah. I mean, that's Ian, what it's all about.
That's the end of it. There's no other important factor.
Ian has asked... Before we talk a bit more about Cass, Rob says, Rod Studd, still a buffoon.
Yes.
John, 17,000 people cared
hashtag
at the Hull.
Buffoon.
People haven't... They don't get it, do they?
No,
they
actually...
They don't get all these things.
I think crowd and the derby is fantastic. Yeah, but I remember 2016 at Four Nations, Craven Park, 5,000 came to see the Kangaroos play Scotland. 5,000.
Yeah, I know.
That's all. Cameron Smith, hotbed, et cetera, Cooper Cronk,
Jonathan Thurston.
And yet we're going there again with the first test in Hull. Why? Because some New Zealanders signed for the club in the 1980s.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Is 17,564 for Hull versus Hull Kingston Rovers a good crowd?
Well, I guess in the current climate.
Well, there you are.
Yeah, yeah.
But would it have been a good crowd?
I don't know.
Would it have been a bigger crowd if that was only the second time they'd played this year as opposed to the sixth?
So I'll go find some crowds in the 50s. Give me a moment. Elsewhere, Ian's asked us about Cass, since you mentioned Cass and going to
the
Hose. Are they going under the radar?
Yes, I think Castleford have got a really good chance of winning the grand final.
Yeah, this would be the ultimate farce, wouldn't it? An ultimate irony after last season, when absolutely magnificent.
When they were 8 points ahead.
Yeah, and you know, it should have won the league, and he should have had it presented at the Hose in front of their adoring fans, packed out the ground. You know, Darryl Powell carried round shoulder high. You know, the most magnificent occasion.
They did win the league this year. They did all that.
Yeah, they did. But it should have been
a little bit too much. That was the problem.
No, that should have been the league title. Should have won it, and it should have been magnificent. And now they're not.
They're going to reverse it. They're going to reverse it.
But so what?
They're going to end up finishing second, going to Old Trafford.
That would be good, but...
Yeah.
Well, but the fact is that any other outcome bar St Helens winning would be a travesty. End of debate. There is no debate. They're so far better than the rest, it's not even funny.
But they need to be better than the rest in the last minute of the season.
And you wonder why there's a problem. Can you imagine ringing Pep Guardiola? Hello, Pep. Yes, I know you've got 100 points and scored 100 goals and you finished like 20 points clear. Everyone. Right, we're just wondering what your hotel arrangements are for your playoff game at home to Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, hello, Pep. Pep, he's gone.
Right, I'll give you an example.
Fast.
The 1997 ARL Grand Final, Manly had beaten Newcastle 13 times in a row, dominated the comp, grand final, Newcastle win with a try in the last 3 seconds.
Yeah.
That scene is one of the best grand finals ever. In your eyes, that's a travesty.
Of course, it's obviously a travesty, isn't it? Is it not?
Malcolm Riley coached Newcastle.
Yeah.
And that's a Manly fan crying that it happened.
I still wake up in nightmares.
There'll be some kind of narrative around it. Wait for the narrative. The narrative this season, right? This is the narrative.
It's no different to a Grand Prix.
Oh, don't start with that. Don't start with that.
They
don't have a 40-lap Trava practice and a 1-lap race, do they? What's that all about?
It's finishing positions, and if Castleford are good enough to come from where they are at the moment to win the grand final, they will have deserved it.
No.
Yes,
Phil, they don't have it. They don't in the Grand Prix. They have a qualifying session. The qualifying session isn't 30 times the length of the race.
It's 3 days, though, isn't it?
No. It's one day.
It's not sport anyway.
It's one day. Right. It's one day. Look, mark my words on this. The narrative.
What if somebody has a fantastic leg of darts?
You can't win a darts match with one leg.
No, but someone then comes with a double at the end who's been 400 behind for most of it. You don't sound terribly sorry. You weren't that good in that leg, so you can't have it.
No, but you've missed doubles, haven't you, over and over again?
Well, so you've got to win your playoff games to get the title.
As you've mentioned darts, and I wasn't even...
Hashtag stick to darts.
Hashtag, if only Mentor Sulovic should have won last night, I had five on it.
Good match, though, wasn't it?
It was very good.
Yeah.
The Hearns... Now Ralph Rimmer's in charge, he's got the keys to the castle. Where are the saviours of rugby league? Yeah, where's the Hearns?
Somebody who knows the Hearns very well.
I think Eddie's a bit busy in the US taking over boxing.
Multi-billion dollar deals, yeah.
Yeah.
You know the Hearns.
He was with them. He was He was at the O2, wasn't
he? He was the Parker White
Fire. The Parker White
Would Fire. Would they be interested in rugby league, or would we need to give them the keys to the house?
I would say the chances of the Hearns taking over the whole sport of rugby league were as close to nil as is humanly calculable.
Can they offer us something in selling our top stars or promoting an event?
What Matchroom are predominantly a company that promotes events. They're an events promoter. I mean, they run the whole of darts, but it's a lot easier to run to control, in inverted commas, 128 professional darts players than it is to control 12 Super League clubs plus whatever, the other divisions. They're an events... I know that there was a discussion that about the Challenge Cup and the Hearns buying the Challenge Cup and saying, right, we'll pay you X and then, you know, we'll make anything on top of that. That was on the agenda, and I don't know how far that went. And I suppose there's a possibility they could do the same with the Magic Weekend or the Summer Bash and sell an event. And they've done that with basketball, didn't they? They put basketball on the O2, didn't they? It was just an event. And they did it with the netball, the Fast Fives netball as well. Was it five-a-side basketball?
I don't think the basketball and the netball were particularly successful, were they?
I don't think they worked as well as they wanted to.
The team sports as opposed to, you know, individual
athletes. They do ping pong. They do ping pong. I work on the ping pong. Yeah, at Ali Pali.
One of the things that's been announced, we think, by the International Federation, yet to be ratified in November, but looks like it will be, is a Nines World Cup.
It's
going to happen every 2 years.
But who's playing?
I think seven's better than Nines,
We don't know who's playing. We don't know the qualification to get
Where's
there.
It going to be?
We don't know where it's going to be played.
Well,
or
we
when
think it's Parramatta, but we don't
or
know.
When. But, and it's going to be very close to 2019 when it's ratified.
It's going to be on about the same time as the GB tour.
But if you've got Nines now as a concept that has been ratified by the international board, that is going to lead to a second product that they can sell in between World Cup years. Is that something the Hearns could get involved with? Ground floor level?
It's got to be an event, and they've got to think they can. You know, the bottom line is Barry's not a fool, he's a businessman, so he's got to think he's going to make money out of it. Mm. If he thinks he's going to pay out X and get X minus one back, then that's a no-no for Barry Hearn. You know, he's not running a charity. He's got to think he's going to make money about it.
But going back to the blank sheet of paper, is a Nines idea at, say, Magic Weekend, which is an event in its own right, something that they may say, as a sport, you need to be looking at a shortened form?
Maybe, but we don't know how attractive it is, and there's got to be money for somebody, because at the moment the clubs wouldn't play, would they? They would play, but they'd put the reserves out.
What happened in the organised NRL. But Robert Elston actually said this in an interview recently, that he would advocate a pre-season Nines, you know, in the Middle East or somewhere warm.
I mean,
for Super League,
if you put Nines at the Magic Weekend, if you put enough money in, they'll play.
Well, if you make it £100,000 winner takes all,
You can't do it mid-season.
Why?
It just doesn't make any sense. Basically, Nines is essentially, you know, you're not pushing for a massive result. It's a bit more of it's a day out. It's a bit of fun. It's not as serious as you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So you might be playing Wigan the week before. You're playing St Helens the weekend after, in between a Nines comp. So how are you preparing?
They won't play unless there's massive money.
Exactly. And you're going to say, well, I'll take Ben Barber out of that game because we'll save him. Oh, sorry, not Ben Barber, but whoever. Player X, our star player. Yeah. So what's the point of the Nines in the middle of the season?
£100,000 wouldn't be enough. If you said it's £1 million prize, then Barber plays, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
But the game hasn't got the money to...
Would you get more people from the North East buying into a Jamboree weekend if it was a tournament in its own right?
I think tournaments in their own right are miles better, because what happens on the Magic Weekend is you play six... league games, and because of the structure, does it matter if Wigan beat Warrington or Warrington beat Wigan? And then the last game, what was it this time?
Hull Derby.
The 15th Hull Derby.
Which does matter, I have to point out.
Yeah, they stayed, but everyone else had cleared off. And the Sevens works. The World Seven Series, just the World Cup in San Francisco. That works because people kind of drift in and out.
They don't watch the games. Sevens. You start drinking at 8:30 in the morning.
By
11, you're off your face and you're not watching. All they do is
covered on major sports websites.
You're drifting back to the bar. You come back in and say,
"It's more about the fancy dress."
It's a big bash event, isn't it?
But
you're off to the bar and you come back in and you find that, you know.
So scored.
But what if
Wakefield won the Nines and Tom Johnson is a superstar and they do get £100,000 and their fans do celebrate the first trophy in 50 years. And a lot of people from the North East who like drinking all day come along and are part of it. Is that not something we should be looking at?
We should be, but you can't hold that in a February or a March in Newcastle.
No, it's too cold. You've got,
I don't think you can do it in May.
Nobody listens, but
they've all turned off to watch Emmerdale, apparently.
Something has to happen with the Magic Weekend, the Summer Bash, because we've already had Lee and Featherstone being stiffed by that fixture and not getting... By the way, Lee and Featherstone would have been in the top four. Everyone knows that, said that. But sooner or later, and Leeds were perilously close to this, you'll get a thing when a team is relegated from the Super League because of the extra fixture, right? And you cannot have relegation with an unfair extra fixture that's going to cost a team £1 million. You just cannot. It's absolutely inconceivable that can continue for any length of time.
It's quite simple. You just include it as a fixture and then alternate.
That's hard. That's much more sensible and fair. So something's got to give. Yeah. Something has to give with that, because you can't carry on like that. I mean, I don't know what Mr. Hetherington would have said had Lee been in that position, as it was. They got hammered by Salford, so it didn't matter. But it's just inconceivable that continues. John's right. If you have it as a home game 1 year and away game the next year, and if your home game is the Magic Weekend, you get this way you can play one at Easter then, instead of two at Easter, play one at Easter. If your home game is the Magic Weekend, which you've lost revenue from, obviously, you get the home Easter game.
Yeah,
there is an alternative. You could have your 11 home games and 11 away games, and then you have two extra games. One is the Magic Weekend, and one is an on the road game.
Yeah, but then it's an uneven fixture list. And suddenly, if Leeds get to play St Helens and Wigan and get beat twice, they get relegated. And then somebody gets to play Salford and Wigan. Not for the relegation, though. How are Leeds going to get a player from there?
Can't wait. Leeds in crisis. John says Super League is too boring, not enough teams, and it's like watching reruns every week. Same teams, week in, week out. Andrew says they are wondering why our game, this is they, is us. Wondering why our game isn't being promoted. It's because it's down to guys like these who sit on and talk amongst themselves and pull the game down. We want the game to be better. We do want the game to be better.
We just care.
It's for our egos.
We passionately care for it to be the best it can be. What positively at the moment should we be talking about?
Well, what can you be talking about? Oh, Challenge Cup semi-finals is big.
Well,
that's going to be good. Listen, the Challenge Cup semi-finals is going to be good because Catalan Dragons have actually got a bit of a squeak in this game.
Shame that Greg Bird's not there.
Well, they had no chance, did they? A few weeks ago, you'd have said no chance. And suddenly now you're thinking, hey,
is it 12 points?
Yeah, 12 points. I think that's a pretty fair bet. And, you know, Leeds, despite being absolutely abject for most of the season, you wouldn't be passed out with shock if they suddenly produced something and turned Warrington over.
6 points, Warrington.
Yeah.
So they're two games that you would go to and think there is a chance of any outcome.
And the doublehead is a good idea, and I hope it works. And, you know, I think it'd be marvellous if the Challenge Cup was reinvigorated, and this might be a way to do it. The Challenge Cup is still a great event. I don't know what the other... Well, it should actually be the last game of the season, shouldn't it? The showpiece event, as it was when it was in May and they played in the winter. But they still had
the Championship or the Premiership final.
Yeah, that was a knockabout. Well, the
Championship wasn't.
No, not the Championship, sorry. I meant when the Premiership, which Widnes used to win quite often, when Chariots was galloping all over the field majestically. I mean, you went to Old Trafford and it was a drink-up. I mean, you know... It didn't matter, did it, if they won or lost that, you know, really. But I mean, the Challenge Cup is still a great competition.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the Challenge Cup final, I love going there. It's still it's a great event and a great experience to be part of the Challenge Cup final. I hope this semi-final doubleheader is successful.
But there's fear that if Catalan got there, it would be a disaster for the sport.
Well, they've been there before.
Why?
They played there before.
Yeah. I mean, that was the opening of the new Wembley, so a lot of people went that weekend anyway part of...
Yeah, fair play.
But, you know, did we get upset when Sheffield got to the Challenge Cup final? No, they're stories that this sport desperately needs. We shouldn't be in fear of that.
Well, it's a great point because the number of stories about the grand final is still far less than the recent stories of the Challenge Cup final. You know, the Sheffield one is an iconic rugby league moment,
Absolutely.
Isn't it? You know, people still talk about it 20 years on, and there's been, you know, when Briscoe scored the tries, and, you know, I know it was a rout, but it was still.
And I know that people talk about
a fires try, you know, all this kind of. Yeah.
And people will talk about grand finals
after he transferred to Wigan.
50 years on, the greatest event in rugby league is the Water Splash Challenge Cup final.
Right.
Yeah, and I watched the doco, by the way, we see it was fantastic.
That,
I knew nothing, literally nothing about it, and it was amazing.
And that's what we can do as a sport.
Those sort of stories need to be celebrated more.
Yeah, those. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those when you, again, nostalgia is great because it makes everyone feel younger. Yeah. But brilliant to see the participants in the final reminiscing in such a sort of
the recreation of the
way,
and still
arguing over the penalty try and all those kind of. It's just lovely. It's heartwarming stuff, isn't it?
And that's what the Challenge Cup can still do. The grand final for all the 75,000 go there, and we shouldn't decry that. That's what the Challenge Cup can do, but we've lost the romance in the full-time professional era because there aren't going to be Featherstone winning the Challenge Cup anymore, with the greatest respect to Featherstone. But what we do need to do is make a window in the Challenge Cup final for teams like that to have their own cup to play for.
Well, you talk about, Phil, you talk about four teams winning Super League, and there's probably only a handful more who've made grand finals, but the Challenge Cup, you see Hull KR making it, you see Cass making it.
Well, that's because of the random draw, isn't it?
That adds to the romance of it for me.
Winning it in 2005, even though it wasn't at Wembley, is still one of the great Challenge Cup moments.
It was a great moment when I backed Kevin Simpson for Man of the Match, and they voted for it well before the final Paul Cook try. Magnificent, though. That's another thing. The voting should be electronic, shouldn't you? All you press guys have got the app. You can vote at the end.
The 80th minute. It should be shown on the big screen who you voted for.
The Northern Rail Cup, which was abolished.
Yeah, so imagine that.
So they can blame Davidson for something.
There's no more writers and broadcast associations, so is there a vote anymore?
You can ensure that Albert Kelly didn't get the Man of the Match by voting against him.
Only one journalist has ever voted for a French player in a Challenge Cup final.
Is that right?
Wasn't me.
You mentioned the Northern Rail Cup, I've said this about 8 years ago. Why isn't the Northern Rail Cup final reinvigorated?
It'd be delayed if it was a Northern Rail Cup.
Yeah, but
that would have our sponsors now, Phil.
It's too hot.
Why isn't that played on as the curtain raiser, if you will, as the Challenge Cup final? And the only argument I had against that was the same team could qualify for both.
No, they can't. Not if you split it up at the beginning so that
No, but you could do it, because Toronto could be in both, couldn't they? If you had it just for the lower league teams.
No, if you had it full-time and part-time, the distinction.
No, I think anyone that's not in the Super League should have went through it. Because they're not going to get the Challenge Cup final. And if they did, they could relinquish their Challenge Cup final spot and you could give it to... Yeah, you could play off between the two losing semi-finalists, couldn't you? It wouldn't make any difference.
I think if going into this weekend we had two semi-finals in the Northern Rail Cup, perhaps played on the Saturday in the two... Challenge Cup semi-finals on the Sunday, and we were watching the likes of, say, Featherstone and Barrow playing for a place at Wembley. Johnson's Paint Trophy.
I agree with
it?
You 100%.
You would sell out Wembley no matter who was there.
Well, you'd play it. Yeah, so let's say it was, let's say it was Batley v Dewsbury, for the sake of argument, was the Northern Rail Cup final. That would be played before St Helens or Catlin versus Warrington Leeds.
Everybody would then buy into going to Wembley, because your side at the beginning of the year would have a chance of playing at Wembley. You're talking about Whitehaven and Barrow and Keighley, that's how you get your community more involved.
I've seen Norwich Victoria play twice at Wembley, which is the greatest days of my life.
How many people went?
It's non-league football, so there was about... It was under 20,000.
But as a proportion of what they would get for a normal home game.
Gee whiz,
10, 12 times more than they normally get?
Norwich's average home gate was about 1,200 at the time. And it was about 18,000 there.
Keighley with the chance to get to Wembley and Scully leading the team out, heaven forbid.
Oh, my.
There'd be...
But you're adding it onto
7,000.
But you're adding it onto the Challenge Cup crowd anyway.
Absolutely.
So you're always going to get the 65,000-70,000 for the Challenge Cup final anyway, aren't you?
And then it wouldn't matter if Catalan got there, because you'd be having such a day that...
I'm a bit concerned that Keighley ran into financial difficulties after they appointed Scully. How much has he been drinking of the bar?
He's done a good job there with Scully. Don't forget, today's show is brought to you by Pony Fat Racers In The Zone Family Day. Experience the final brilliant family fun day of the season with tons of special events on Sunday the 19th of August. In The Zone Family Fun Days are the perfect way for all the family to learn more about racing. You can walk the course, get a behind-the-scenes tour of the race course, and meet famous horses from the past. There's also a fun fair, face painting in a circus, and a Hunt the Golden Horseshoe competition, and not forgetting about the racing, including the highlight, the £60,000 Highfield Farm Flying Fillies listed race, with some very speedy equine ladies on display to put your family package tickets for Sunday the 19th of August today. Head to ponty-racers.co.uk. And that's the kind of thing you can do as a sport to get people in who would not usually come and watch your sport by adding value.
What,
and maybe they'll
you
come
mean
back
like
again.
At Magic Weekend, which is over 2 days, ending Saturday with a really decent band.
If only we knew somebody.
Well, they were going to do that at York Races on Friday night, but then it rained and Tom Jones couldn't get there.
Thank goodness that Boyzone turned up on Saturday, which is not the what I was there. I said, rain, rain, just rain.
But what you don't do is get Little Mix to play before a game and ruin part of your pitch.
Presumably, if it rains, you get Cliff Richard.
Well, fingers crossed.
Too soon.
Not on BBC One. Saturday, it's the big one. It's live. Women's Shield and Challenge Cup finals from Warrington. Bradford versus Stanley Elite, followed by Leeds versus Castleford. Terry is a Castleford fan. The ladies' game is a big growth area, but still, the RFL have stuck two fingers up by persisting with Warrington as the venue for the ladies' Challenge Cup final.
I'm with Terry.
I feel like I'm getting in trouble for saying this. The fans of the top of the four rather Yorkshire teams involved have a round trip of 108 to 132 miles. We did ask, but we're looking forward to the game. Now, it's not going to change now. We're going to enjoy it. Should be a good game. Leeds, you'd expect Bradford and Stanley would be a slight mismatch, but...
I've not seen them play, but...
I've not seen Stanley, but, you know, Bradford...
But I do know, if you
team.
Are in the Warrington area, or you're not doing anything on Saturday and want to travel over, you will not be disappointed with the Leeds-Castleford Challenge Cup final. I've seen the two teams play earlier in the season in a league game. It was one of the most entertaining matches this year. They both got names in them. We talk about we need to promote celebrities and superstars. They both have them. And there's absolutely no reason why people shouldn't know the names of those players and the skills that they show. It's a fierce derby rivalry with a cup at stake. What more could you want apart from the game being played at Featherstone?
Well, David says, why is the Women's Challenge Cup final not at Wembley as a doubleheader with the men's final? I believe there is a cost issue at Wembley, isn't there, with how long you...
It's a good question, though.
I think the only reason we were told that there couldn't be a doubleheader at Wembley other than a schools game is that the RFL would have to pay a lot in stewarding the stadium. But I think if you fill the stadium, that doesn't become an issue.
Fair point.
And maybe the women's game needs to establish these finals as events. Well, you don't do that by taking them to a 14,000-seater stadium and maybe have 400 or 500 people there. You put it in a 7,000-seater stadium, equidistant between all the four competing clubs, and a club itself who plays the women's game and has played really well this year and promoted it really well. And then that stadium is half full, and the next year you go, we've really got an event here.
Ian says, I bet the panel can't name three players in the women's game. Lois Fussell, Jodie Cunningham, Kirsty Moroney, Captain Bradford. There's three. Rhiannon Marshall, my favourite player, when she battered that
Watch out for Danielle Anderson on Saturday afternoon, the Leeds prop. Danielle Anderson.
Oh,
she
right, okay.
is fantastic.
So, it's getting flashbacks from the Warriors and Parramatta and St Helens. Yeah.
If you ask me to name more than three players in the Wakefield squad sometime, then I'm just going to start the season.
Paulie.
I only know Paulie Coyce. He's the tall one. Yeah, he's the tall toy's that one. Then there's David Fafita and then loads of other blokes.
A fast one outside.
Yeah. Look at all these Huddersfield players. All right, there's Jermaine McGilvery. There's some other ones. So there you go. apparently everyone's upset because we haven't spoken enough about things people are talking about today. Mark says Rib League's issue is that celebrity culture has subverted sporting celebrities. Sports who have individuals are known, but beyond that, how many do people know? And it's the interesting thing.
Why
is diving on TV? Because people have heard of Tom Daly, but can you name any other divers? Don't say football.
Jack Law, because he comes from Leeds.
Football players are well known because how much money is pumped into it, says Mark. Ben says we should have two increased leagues, two up, two down. Teams like Coventry, Hemel, etc. should be in the top league of the amateur league with the opportunity of gaining promotion if finishing first. Didn't we have Nottingham have a problem that they switched to amateur rugby league and couldn't get games because teams wouldn't go play them or something?
They haven't. They are a team that play in a community league. They were in the Midlands division, but they weren't enough teams, so they've moved into the Yorkshire League and they've had problems getting some opponents going down there. But that's a bigger issue about what we do with the community game at the moment and how we fund it and what goes back to development offices. What do we actually want from the sport?
Jane and many people talking about Halifax saying money isn't everything, you need passion, like we have at Halifax. They've done a great job.
Fantastic. Well,
they deserve credit. Yeah. But, I mean, do they want to be in Super League? Could they go into Super League next year?
I think if you listen to the interview of their coach last night, who has done a magnificent job.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic
not
coach.
Not just what he's done this year, but almost rebuilding the team the year they didn't get into the playoffs and had a significant drop in income. But he was saying, you know, it's almost impossible looking at what they've got to do over 7 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Just run this by me again, because I don't get this. Hang on a minute. Right. What's the big deal here? Because haven't they got... They've been in the qualifiers before, haven't they?
Mm. Last year.
Right. So they've got the central funding for the qualifiers, haven't they?
Mm. Oh, no.
Right, so they've got money which they've invested on a wage bill that's probably... I mean, Toronto's got the highest wage bill by a mile.
But they're still playing against teams who are spending $800,000 or more than they are.
They're playing against Toronto. They've finished in a different county from Toronto. They've actually finished below Lee, but because they played an extra game, they've then finished above Lee. Lee have underperformed for whatever reason, and they finished in about the same position as you expect them to, relative to teams like London, who are spending probably something similar, and they finished above teams that spend well below them. Right, so let's get it right here. They've actually finished about... If you said to someone with Halifax's wage bill, where should they finish? The answer would be about fourth, and they finished fourth.
I think there was a case for saying that actually they should have finished below Featherstone and Lee.
Featherstone's
owner has put in a lot more money than Halifax has Lee's.
But they did finish below Featherstone and Lee.
They are the best on a proper part-time team in the sport, for which they deserve a huge amount of credit.
I'd like to give them credit. But
whether they should then be competing for a place in Super League, even they say...
They've got no chance of winning four or five games in the qualifiers.
Any outcome is possible, John. Any match.
Hopefully they will generate some more serious gate income because they play Toronto, Salford and Leeds at home.
Let me break into this because Andy's just told me there's highlights of Rugby Union Sevens on Channel 5 and I've got it on now. There's no one there. There's a big empty crowd of seats. It's like watching tennis in the middle of the season.
That's not international sevens.
Well, no, but it's club sevens. There's no one there. But the highlights are on national television on a Monday night at 7 o'clock. You don't have to wait until after the test card.
Yeah, but that's not the Elite Sevens
it's
tour.
Made up, isn't it?
But, it's not made up.
But there's still no one there.
No.
Sonny Jardine, that is a great name of the Wasp player.
It's a kudos to Halifax there, but what they're going to be facing teams with more resources, isn't it? Like Leeds.
Significantly more resources, not just a little bit more.
Yeah, Toronto.
But should we not be structuring a competition whereby Halifax's last game is for the championship trophy at Headingley?
Against who?
Against whoever is the top team in the championship, but promotion isn't contingent upon it.
Well, they finished fourth, which is...
Yeah. I know you don't like playoffs.
Pretty good, so that's about what I'd expect, about fourth or fifth. It's pretty good effort, but what do you want to do?
Semi-finals and a championship final and £500,000 prize money and a trophy.
Well, then they'll probably lose to Toronto.
They might not. Any outcome in a grand final is possible.
Yes, I understand that, but the most likely outcome would be that Toronto would beat Halifax.
The most likely outcome was that Castleford were going to beat Leeds last year, but it...
Yes, I understand, but what...
But it didn't stop 70,000 people going to Old Trafford. Because the point is...
Does some of them get promoted or something? What?
Not necessarily. Promotion... How many of the teams that...
We had that before. We had that before when Featherstone constantly won the championship and constantly had to trot off to some meaningless grand final, which some they won and some they lost.
It wasn't meaningless.
Nobody cared.
They did. A lot of people turned up and there was a trophy and you need to put sufficient prize money behind it.
No, Phil. No, you're misremembering.
Of the four teams that are in the championship at the moment, how many of those could play in Super League?
Any of them.
No, compete.
And survive.
Compete in Super League.
Well, they'd have to... Well, if they got promoted, they'd get the broadcast handout, wouldn't they?
Yes, but they don't have the infrastructure.
Who?
Teams that are part-time. Is London's ground up to Super League
standard?
No,
is it?
So should we have said, before these qualifiers start, what is London's plan for where they're going to play should they get into Super League?
Right, so what is the earthly point of a competition involving four teams there and four teams from the Super League, of which you've just erudite explained.
There is no earthly
at
point.
At least two of them have which got is why no the purpose playing.
Which is why the alternative...
You have to raise some money. They get some money.
Yes, the alternative for those teams is to eventually win a trophy and get additional prize money. Because winning a trophy...
Right.
If you were to say to Halifax... That they have a chance of playing in a... No, I'm saying that there should be reasons other than... that are significantly important about whether they can be competitive at the elite level. What happened to Lee in 2005?
They got when they went to the Super League, they hardly they won a game and they were absolutely inept.
Yes,
and they got relegated.
Prepared for it. Yes. Yeah. And Super League then started the debate about bringing in licensing on the back of that. Took another 2 or 3 years to come in. But so what I'm saying is why
we've just
can
been told
we not
that Halifax,
finish
Halifax fans
the season.
Are delighted. They've done marvellously and they're looking forward to the competition.
And should they be able to finish the season with a trophy and prize money, and not be worried about whether that takes them into Super League or not?
Well, they do get prize money, don't they, for finishing where they are in the qualifiers?
Enhanced prize money.
They get quite a
lot.
For
winning a trophy.
Well, they do. They get like £500,000 for where they are now, don't they?
But they're spending about...
Rising to about 750.
But they've got about 450,000 at the moment from last year, haven't they?
Yes.
Right, so they will be tailoring a lot of what they... Now, I think the most laudable thing about Halifax is they have a reserve grade and an academy. Because that's what they choose to invest
yes,
their money.
I think that's marvellous, but let's get it right. But there's been quite a few occasions when Halifax haven't invested very well and they've got into financial difficulties.
But I would like Halifax
who was in charge of, oh.
to be able to win a trophy rather than compete in an eight where the likelihood is they're going to lose most of the games they play.
Yes, more than likely. I'd like
their season to end with a trip to a prestigious rugby league ground, perhaps one that's been redeveloped recently.
Bellevue.
And win a trophy and some significant prize money.
But if there was two up, two down, they'd have been points difference away from getting promoted.
But I think we need to cut our cloth to the cards that we have in our hand.
What do you think will happen if, by some quirk of sporting fate, they accumulate enough points to get into the £1 million game and win it? What would happen then? So that they don't want to be promoted?
I don't know whether they would have the infrastructure to be a full-time club.
Well, Batley said that, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've got... Well,
when they're in the...
But what do you mean by infrastructure? They've got a ground.
All the staff that you need.
Well, you'd have to get them, wouldn't you?
But that doesn't come out of your Sky money. Your Sky money will pay for your squad.
Right.
So where are you going to find the other million
You're
or so pounds that you need?
You're also recruiting players in September, October.
Well, their gate would go up, wouldn't it?
When most of the best
but
players
are
already
signed. But where
would
you get the money in advance of
right,
that?
Right, so what on earth is the point of this competition?
Well,
that's what I'm asking.
What's the point of any of this?
Rob, that's what the Super League clubs are trying to put forward.
The same Super League clubs who voted it in now want to vote it out.
I was told that it was the greatest. It was the panacea for every ill in rugby league, and it was every minute mattered. But you're telling me this is a complete farce.
Yes,
and two of the teams shouldn't even be in it.
No, I didn't say they shouldn't be in it. I just said
or wasting their
time. At the moment, we've got Toronto, who have no indication whatsoever if they will allow. To be promoted, should they win it?
You said London and Halifax can't be.
London, who by their own admission have not got a ground that is sufficient for Super League.
It's not. So,
right.
Toulouse could be in it.
Toulouse, again, would you not want, as a responsible sport, to know which backers would be coming in to enable them to sustain a Super League presence? It's a rugby city, it's got potential commercial backers, but you need to know they're there before. The door is open to say, come in and, oh, look, it's failed. And the same with Halifax.
Which, incidentally, it did when Toulouse were previously in their previous reincarnation, or incarnation.
All I'm saying is, as a responsible sport, you don't wait for these things to happen. You plan for the best a club can be.
Hey, Steve, are you for real? The qualifiers have improved the quality of rugby league, where a Super League has brought it down.
No, they haven't. You've now concentrated. This is the ultimate farce now, because the next 8 weeks, the elite competition is almost literally of zero interest to anybody. Nobody cares about any of the 28 matches that will be played, and that's right in a sense, because all the concentration is going to be on mediocre teams playing other mediocre teams like Widnes. Faffing around in a game against Halifax, and that's where everyone's going to get all excited about the fact that, you know, Toronto might beat Salford. I mean, we should actually be talking about St Helens and Wigan. These are our elite teams with our elite players and our star players Castleford, Wigan, St Helens, Warrington, Huddersfield on this great run, you know, but nobody will care.
What have the qualifiers bought us other than a team that got promoted got relegated, a team that got relegated right. got promoted, and one of those teams is on the verge of administration.
Right, and...
Tell me what's good about the qualifiers.
And they would have been promoted anyway in a two up, two down, or one up, two down. Hull KR and Lee would have gone up the season they went up anyway, wouldn't they? They won the championship, didn't they? Division. What it has done is saved rank bad teams from relegation, because Hull KR, in fact, when they got relegated, were unlucky. What did they finish? Ninth, tenth? Ninth or tenth?
The team that's finished bottom in Super League has not been
right,
relegated.
Right, exactly. So what it's done is failed to punish rank ineptitude. Let's get it right. As I've said for years and then, I went to watch Widnes and I've got an affinity for Widnes. Widnes should be relegated. They've been absolutely useless. They've been one of the worst teams ever to play in Super League, and they should be booted out of it.
Rod, as Widnes fans were saying all year, particularly at the start of the year, it was Dennis Betts' fault.
Oh, that's right.
Even though they sacked him and keep losing,
and we've
but
noticed
it's Dennis'
there,
fault.
John, haven't we, how a coaching change is always the
well,
panacea.
Kevin Sinfield has managed to win one game out of four as Leeds coach.
No, not
a great...
the coach. He's not the coach.
Come
James
on.
Lowe's
we know,
is the coach.
We know he is.
James Lowe's
we know
the
he
coach.
Is.
I was actually looking the other day at Alan Shearer's record as Newcastle United manager in 2009,
one of the great managers.
Which is entirely similar to the strategy Leeds are employing, bringing in this sort of great legend of the club.
He did.
Bringing this legend to the club and with no coaching experience and hoping that he's going to bring a magic wand with him. Shearer, where's Shearer's record? Yeah, Shearer actually did win a game as Newcastle manager.
A game.
He won one, drew two and lost five.
So he's not as successful as Kieran Cunningham at St Helens.
No, in no way.
We've got 15 minutes or so left of the programme. We've been accused by everyone on social media, all of the people accused of being negative tonight about rugby league. Have we been too negative today? Apart from saying Halifax, you know, done well to get into the top four, what's happened in the past?
I'm actually going
to
support Halifax in this campaign. Well, what I say to people who say that about being negative is this:
yeah, what do you like about rugby league? Well, that's what we've been.
What do you like? I love watching rugby league, but I want to celebrate excellence in sport. That's what I like to see. Excellence is what attracts people. When Leeds played North Queensland, the reason I went to watch that game was to watch Jonathan Thurston play rugby league, because I thought I may not get a chance to see Thurston play actually on the paddock with my own eyes. I thought I'm going to be there to watch Thurston. That's why I went to watch. I couldn't care less if Leeds won or North Queensland won. That's why people go to watch, and they go to watch superstar players playing games with great rivalries, and you know. That's what I want to celebrate. I want to watch St Helens play Wigan in a game that means something, and watch Barber go the length of the field, you know, with a magnificent sidestep and handoff and score length of the field, or Johnny Lomax produces something brilliant, or Samkins, or whatever it is. I don't want to watch, you know, teams sluicing round in meaningless games endlessly, going round in circles with this ridiculous idea that the more games you play, the more money you make. It's a complete non sequitur. I just want to see the best teams play.
I think people are mixing up perceived negativity with an honesty of where the sport is at the moment. And I'm old enough to have seen it in 1973-74 when it was at arguably its lowest ebb. The average crowd was around about 4,000 at the top clubs. The commercial income coming into the sport was £20,000 from one cigarette sponsor. And the television coverage was virtually...
Bring back cigarette sponsors.
The Challenge Cup final and a couple of rounds before. The sport was at its lowest ebb. And what happened was it went out and recruited two people who hadn't been on the radar. David Oxley, who was an English teacher at a public school, but understood rugby league because he was from Hull, and David Howes, who understood at that point the concept of marketing. One of the first things David Howes did was he got together with John Huxley, who was in the Daily Mirror at the time, and they went on a roadshow. It was a Daily Mirror roadshow, and it went round all of the professional clubs, and it generated interest. Within 15 years of that appointment, we were selling out Wembley for international games. The names of Afaya and Hanley and Davies and all the others that we still laud as being the superstars of our sport were created in that era from a nadir We took the sport, we analysed it, we said we cannot go on. The other thing that happened at the time was that Barla was instituted so that the amateur game could self-determine because the professional game didn't have the resources to, which at that time was very, very important. Now, all I'm saying at the moment is I think in the modern sporting era, and you can call it negative if you want, we are at a similar point of the wheel-turning circle. We're at the bottom. The issues that we are talking about are relevant to what rugby league needs to be in the modern sporting environment. And if we can't discuss and suggest remedies to that, then A, we're not doing our job as potential journalists. We're also hoodwinking people if we think that everything is in the garden is roses. But we're doing it because
problem,
we care.
Part of the problem, Phil, is that some journalists haven't called things out when they need to be called out, and situations have gotten worse, like in leadership, in the governing body, and in certain areas. And if you just...
If you want to be a cheerleader, that's fine. But I think what we're talking about tonight is more than that.
People don't like us talking about other sports, but they're useful to compare and contrast. Now, I'm going to mention one here, and I know it's individual sports, so it doesn't quite work as an example. But it's not too long ago that Sky stopped boxing pay-per-views because they weren't the fights out there people would pay to see. And look what's happened. Eddie Hearn's created the Hearns, whatever, they've created these stars. They sold out Wembley for a not Wembley, where was it? The O2 for the years ago.
They sold out Frost Groves at Wembley and stuff like that.
Bellevue, which had nothing around it whatsoever. Yeah. And they pretended to hate each other and hugged each other again.
So they sold the fight with
nothing riding on it, and it sold loads of money.
And fights are selling out like it's Ali Frazier. You know, aren't they? You know, and they're not. It's not Ali Frazier, and it's not Duran against Leonard and Hearns, and these kind of icons of the game. And you know, when Tyson was fighting, it's brilliant marketing.
Whilst we should stick to darts is a classic example of a sport that not that long ago was rooted in a culture very similar to rugby league. It was a pub sport in a smoky room with very few people that had an image of being attached to a certain section of society. Look at it now. Look at the arenas it plays. I've been fortunate enough to go to one Grand Prix event at the Leeds Arena. I didn't care who won any game.
Why would you?
But I had five games, one after the other, that was just the most sensational entertainment. Yeah. And I came away thinking, I don't, you know, whoever picks up that trophy, they'll deserve it. But what I've had is a great night. Yeah. Why can't rugby league be thinking like that?
Yeah, those are just very great events. I mean, you know, it's just well marketed. And when you go, you've got a 99.9% chance of having a good night out, and you'll go home and I mean, darts was in a situation where people, you know, when I mentioned darts, they said, oh, darts. And all I have to say was, go once or put it on the telly once, and if you don't like it, then don't watch it again, and then that's fine, I'll have it. But 9 times out of 10, they'll come back to you and say, I went to the darts, and you know, and so you've got to get people in, haven't you?
Well, Ian's asked a great question. Do we need a villain? Yes, we do.
Villains are great.
Absolutely.
Bristow. It's great.
You either loved Bristow or you didn't like Bristow, you know. So you had an interest. I mean,
but at the moment, our villains are administrators, for heaven's sake.
I think someone said we know more about chairman than we do about the place.
We have to give them a chance, Phil. We have to give them a chance.
This idea that people are being... I get it, obviously, on Twitter. Like, you're being negative. And my answer is always the same. Right, I'll tell you what you should do. Right, stick your fingers in your ears, close your eyes, and put on Lady Gaga's Poker Face. And when you come and sing along with it, it's brilliant. And you won't read anything I say, or you won't see anything I say. And when the song's finished and Lady Gaga's finished, I'll still be right and the problems will still be there, but you just will be oblivious to them all. I mean, that's how it is, isn't it? Because being oblivious to the problem, just going, poker face, won't change that the issues aren't there. And the sooner you address them, the better, you know.
But I haven't been addressed, which is the problem.
John's right, you know, cheerlead away. The cheerleaders will shout us down, and the problems will still come back when Lady Gaga's on to the next song. So you've got to get hold of Rob, and Rob Elston, I think, is going to get hold of it. And they are getting hold of it because they come straight in and say, these Super 8s are going. And that's not the only issue, obviously, but it is an issue. And I think Rob will get hold of it by the scruff of the neck.
Which, again, goes back, we said it when the appointment was made, why does a sport that's £2 million in debt, who has the right man now to be its spokesperson and front man, need two chief executives? How much time of Rob's is going to be wasted brokering deals?
I think it's
that
good
he
that there's two chief executives, because there is a focus on Super League as its own body running itself, because the RFL has shown that it can't do that job properly. Mm. The sport's been run into the ground. So there needs to be change.
The philosophy of how we play the game, the number of substitutions, all of that kind. He can't do it. He should be given a licence to do it.
We all love rugby league. We all want rugby league to be bigger because it's to our benefit as well. It's to the benefit of everyone that the sport is bigger than it is right now. We have to find the ways of making it bigger. But as you say, if we sit here and say everything's great, we're never going to solve the problems.
We're fooling the public.
It's what your fans in the past, and they always say, well, you can't go back and say, why did the club fail at this point? Because we need to look forward. No, we need to know why that happened, because if we don't, we'll make those same mistakes again. I'm watching these rugby union highlights. I've got no idea where any of these players are, but it's a well put together package of a sevens competition between players who are probably nowhere near the first team because it's a sevens competition. But it's on national television at 7 o'clock. It's in HD. It looks good. Where's our... And then people say, why don't we give some games to another channel instead of having them all on Sky? And it's probably down to money. And it
well,
would
I guarantee that would be being paid for by the
And that's
RFU.
The thing, is that we haven't got the money, because we've lost $2 million, to say to Channel 5 or whoever, here's a highlights package. The Football League, the one that Leeds United play in, their highlights are going to be on a channel no one knows exists this season. No one's going to watch them on Quest. That's gone from BBC and ITV to Channel 5, and now it's gone to the lowest rung.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what Rob Elston and the Super League clubs do when the next broadcast contract comes up in 3 years' time, how Rob looks at...
They're going to have to start negotiating before then.
A little doubt. I mean, that's going to come in the next 18 months at longest, isn't it? And be interesting to see if, talk about another sport, like obviously Premier League, but that's got different packages. Darts, the vast majority of PDC events are on Sky Sports, but ITV have packages and BBC has an event. I don't know if Rob's looking at that or what he's looking
at. Warehousing your product on one channel is not going to be the way forward.
Yeah.
A cricket, I've realised that. You're just keeping it all on one provider. Obviously you're going to get a massive pay for it, but surely you want to be seen on by as many people as possible. And that means free-to-air TV.
How are kids going to be the next Callum Watkins if they don't subscribe to Sky at the moment? They don't know he exists. Other than he was the bloke in the World Cup final who had his ankle tapped, and we never saw him again.
When England would have won.
When England
they're not going to watch the highlights, are they?
In golden point extra time.
You said, cricket's. They've got highlights, haven't they? There's terrestrial highlights.
Channel 5.
Cricket,
yeah.
Channel 5, sorry, golf. The Open was on Sky, wasn't it? It's not on BBC anymore. So.
The highlights are on the BBC.
Oh, it's the BBC, I think, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, look, it'd be interesting to see. There's all sorts of ways of doing it, isn't there? All sorts of models of doing it and packages and stuff like that.
But I think overall there will be less money, which is why they're already positioning themselves to say whatever money comes in for a Super League TV deal, even if it's sold in packages, we're keeping it. There'll be no drip-down effect. Mm. And that is a worry.
Of course.
And that's also a worry that you've got two chief executives.
But by the same token, that would mean that the Championship can negotiate its own deal. But I'm not suggesting for an instant it's going to be enormous.
Who is going to come in, though, and agree to...
We don't know, do we? And then you've got all the other aspects of streaming and all the other things that are going with it that we really don't know how that... I mean, technology could be completely different in 3 years' time.
Absolutely.
How quickly things advance. So, I mean, who knows what would be able to be available to clubs. And then you've got Bradford doing their own streaming.
But I think what we do know is that if you are trying to include people like Amazon Prime and Netflix in that, you perhaps do have to have clubs called Toronto. To sell the deal.
Well, the bigger your global footprint is, yes.
Yeah. I think Toronto will qualify for the Super League from these playoffs, don't you?
I think so.
You could see them being in the top three.
I think it's
going to
be more difficult than some would think by virtue of the fact they've walked through the two divisions they've been in. They've not played seven high-intensity games, one after the other, and there'll be a travel element that they haven't had to do either.
I get that, well...
But essentially, they won't be playing in blocks.
Phil,
so,
essentially they need to beat three championships teams and two Super League teams.
They need to win their home
four.
Games and a couple
That's
of games on the road.
That's entirely feasible for them.
And it's quite possible.
Yeah.
We've been asked for the millionth time, why don't Sky show Championship games? They don't have to as part of their contract.
Because it costs them more to stage
because
than
there's
the
not,
viewers
there's not
that
an
will
audience.
Watch
there's not an audience. For all the people
they're
who say it's a great product and there are some great Championship games, there's not a bit large enough audience, and you look at the crowd figures around all the championship grounds support that.
I think there's another issue, that there isn't one championship, there are two. And we're fooling ourselves if we think there's anything other than that. You look at the league table. The top of the championship is totally different to the bottom. You have to have a competition that week to week engages a broadcaster. And unfortunately, the championship, the way it's structured, which is partly down to the disbursements that you get at the beginning of the season, cannot deliver that.
Yeah. Joe thinks I've lost control of the show, but really I'm like Albert Kelly and I just get involved when I want to. At the end of the Rugby Union highlights, it was produced by a company called Premier Rugby Productions.
Yeah. There's a clue there.
Sexy title.
So, you know what? Proper sport this weekend, Saturday afternoon. Look at this. I'm going to break the internet. Bradford Bulls versus Whitehaven, League One live. The Women's Challenge Shield and Challenge Cup finals live from Warrington. Both live via Proper Sport.
If you can't get there, watch it.
Perhaps other places on Saturday. Just keep your eyes out for that one, listeners. Oh, yes. I can't say anything else, but if it all comes to fruition.
Stick to darts.
Hell's freezing over. We've got about 2 minutes left of the programme. So here are the predictions. Everyone's upset. You know, this is the thing. Women's Rugby League, the PDRL, those are growth areas where if we get it right at the start, and perhaps we haven't, then we can attract new audiences.
And new broadcasters.
And we've not got enough time now, because coming to the end of the programme, but there was a great point made in that Dewsbury and Batley article in The Guardian. Why don't the clubs do enough to attract the new audiences, such as the Asian community? Seeing as it, when did Ikram Butt retire?
About, was it 1999-ish? Well, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, and we haven't got time to discuss that anyway. But it's a point. We've got to attract new audiences wherever they're from. But now we should just throw everyone out. Let's look at the Challenge Cup semi-finals. Who is going to win? First of all, Catalans versus St Helens. John?
St Helens. No doubt.
Rod? I
think St Helens will win, but any outcome is possible. And I think that in my Racing Post column, I will be tipping Catalan Dragons with the 12-point handicap.
I just think Greg Bird is one loss too many for the Dragons. I really fancy them in the run-up to this week. I know Dominic Peyrou is going to be a loss for St Helens, but I think the scales have tipped back to the manner in which Saints won last week against Warrington, when they were never ahead for any of the 80 minutes but won the game, which has got to be a record in itself. I think they have enough to get to Wembley, and the desire, having not been there for 10 years, I think will just tip it Saints' way.
Leeds and Warrington?
I think even though Leeds have got the ability to pull it out of the hat on big occasions, it's got to be Warrington, and another loss for Leeds. Crisis.
I actually think this could get ugly. I actually think Leeds could win, but I actually think this could get pretty unpleasant for Leeds. I think this could be an absolute,
Warrington Toronto
this
ugly.
This could be a no, not ugly in terms of like, you know,
violence.
Not ugly as in get in the bin, get in the bin. Right, that's
show
it. Get
me
in the
respect.
Bin.
Show me bin. Respect.
Right. I think Warrington will win comfortable.
Yeah, I think having seen Leeds on Friday night, that the hole that they're in is bigger. And even though they've got half a dozen players to come back, I do think Warrington will win.
We're done Saturday. Join us. Women's Challenge Cup and Shield finals. Bradford versus Whitehaven from League One as well. John, thank you very much. Rod, you've stoked up the internet. Thank you for
my
that.
My pleasure.
They'll never get it. And Phil, thank you much indeed. For all the people complaining about today's show, don't worry, you'll be back to normal next week.